This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants! Jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown!
Welcome to our first show from the Combine on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelt, Paul Dottino with you. The phone number is 201-939-4513, where we'll do our best to get your calls in over the next 3 days. And it's a very busy 3 days for us here in Indianapolis. 3 2-hour programs from 12 to 2 each and every day. First for today's show, a very busy program. In just a little bit, we're going to have Pat Shurmur's press conference, a little bit shortened from earlier today. Also, Dave Gettleman, the Giants general manager, spoke to the media. We'll have that for you, too, and we'll get your calls in reaction to what both those guys have to say. And later on the show, Alex Marvez from SiriusXM, Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, Dane Brugler from NFL Draft Scout, Art Stapleton, of course, covers the Giants from the record. So a very busy show, but Paul, we should kind of open things up here and talk about the importance of the Combine and why we are here. It's not just about the draft. This is also almost like an NFL convention where all the teams are here preparing for free agency, which begins in a couple of weeks. So that is also a very important part of this week or so here in Indianapolis. General managers talking with agents and other teams about what's going to happen in free agency.
Well, yeah, free agency starts on March 14th. Now, of course, there's the couple of days prior to that where teams can actually talk with agents legally according to the NFL rules and see what they're doing in terms of contract numbers and kind of getting ballparks as to if or not they're going to sign a guy on the 14th. But really here, the seeds are being planted, John. Even though teams are not necessarily talking, wink, wink, to agents and players.
Well, you can't. That would be tampering.
Exactly. There are certainly feelers, itches being scratched, smoke signals and messages that are kind of going through back doors. People are getting a feeling, in other words, about what teams are going to try to do. If not know exactly what they're going to do, what they're going to try to do. And I know for a fact,
I've heard some agents out in the hallway making calls already about some players. They are certainly trying to get their guys positioned to where they get to talk to the teams that may be able to give them the most money.
Absolutely. And then, of course, you have what's going on with the NFL draft. You have all the players here, over 330 this year, that will be working out here at the Combine. You have the various events on the field. We'll start there first. You get timed on things like the 40-yard dash, the long shuttle, the short shuttle, the three-cone drill, the linemen, of course. And oh, everybody does the bench press, but it's more important, I think, for the linemen, the linebackers, and the running backs. You have the broad jump, the high jump. And these numbers, really, Paul, will supplement what these teams already know about these players from what they saw on tape during the college football season.
Yeah, let's not make any mistake about it. It's still the game tape, John, that will make up the bulk of these players' grades. But here you have the medical, which is the most important thing that's going to get done. In fact, I passed the medical facility where the MRI is and the electronic X-ray machine is. They didn't want to let me in there, John, by the way.
The bottom line, by the way,
they might have found nothing up here.
Well, that's true. More so than anything else that happens here, medical can drop a guy down on the boards more so than anything else. And I'll go back to 2 or 3 years ago. We sat here and we talked about Miles Jack as a top 10 pick because of what they saw in his knee at medical testing. He got picked in the second round, dropped almost 30 selections from where they thought he would go before the combine happened. So you're right. The medicals is something that we don't know about. Stuff gets leaked out. Nothing becomes public about that. It's not announced, but it will affect at least a couple players' draft stock in either a good or a bad way over the course of the week.
And then I think the second thing that may or may not be the most important, it kind of depends on your frame of reference and what your preference is how the player does in his interview. Now, it's not about necessarily the canned questions or canned answers he gives, but teams will try to ask things that are a little bit off base, a little bit off the map, just to get a feel for how the guy reacts. And, for example, Giants GM Dave Gettleman has said, and we'll talk more about this in a bit, so I don't want to go deep into it now, but it's important to understand a player's football mentality. It's not about answering some of the stock questions. It's about his football mentality. And those interviews, Lawrence Phillips, for example, I know of a factual story about how in his testing and interview session, he became extremely belligerent and actually wound up taking himself, because of his actions, off a team's board. They said, we will not draft you, period. Have a good life. Get out of here. It happens.
And we'll talk more about that. And, of course, it's only 15 minutes at a time for the interviews at the Combine, so it's not a lot to get to know the guy.
Right.
But the Giants will also put guys in front of the chalkboard and the whiteboard and see how quickly they can, you know, analyze and take in football information and regurgitate it, similar to what you might see from the old TV show John Gruden's Quarterback's Club, where he'll kind of put stuff on the board, have the quarterback do
yeah.
it. Those types of things will happen in that interview environment as well. And, of course, the analysis continues with the players, and that's really the most important thing here. And we've never done more important shows at the Combine than the ones this year, because the Giants are selecting second overall in this year's draft. It's a pick that can be a transformational, franchise-shifting mm-hmm. type of selection, whether you make the pick or trade down. It can do wondrous things for your organization. And the whole coaching staff is here. All the scouts are here. Dave Gettleman and his front office staff is here. And all these men will be doing their job analyzing these players to try to figure out what the next step forward is for the Giants to come back from a 3-13 record that no one, from the coach to the GM, is running from.
Yeah, and let's not make any mistake about it, folks. The hard work doesn't start today. It's already begun. The Giants' entire scouting staff has been in place. They didn't change anybody from the scouting staff from the previous regime. And so what has happened over the course of December into January and now into February, all those guys continued to do their work, their due diligence, and then for about a week and a half or 2 weeks or so ago, Dave Gettleman got together with all of them and got the coaches together, the coordinators together, and they had brainstorming sessions for almost 2 weeks straight. And in those brainstorming sessions, they formulated one unified game plan as to what they're going to do here, what they're looking to find out, which guys are supposed to focus on which things, and they have a direction as to how they'd like to proceed. Now, that doesn't mean they know the pick. Dave Gettleman himself has said he doesn't know what the pick is going to be or what he's going to do with it. But there is a framework in place, a giant framework, if you will, that indicates what the Giants want to accomplish. How they accomplish it, that's up for grabs.
Absolutely. So let's get going, folks. Here's how we're going to handle the first hour of the show. We're going to hear from Pat Shurmur. Then we're going to take your calls for 5 to 10 minutes or so. Your take on what Shurmur said, anything else in the draft is fair game as well. We're going to try to rapid fire through the calls a little bit to get as many people in as possible, because we're going to have so many guests on, okay? Then we'll hear from Dave Gettleman. We'll do a caller segment after that. And then we'll start going rapid fire with the guests, and we'll squeeze in your calls here or there. So it's really the second time we're hearing from Pat Shurmur at the podium. He addressed the media earlier today in Indianapolis at the Combine. Let's listen to Pat Shurmur. This was his opening statement in Indianapolis earlier today.
Most of us are down here now. We started the process, certainly, of trying to get as much information as we can this week. Actually did some meetings last night. We'll have meetings throughout the week and try to get as much information as we can on all the players that are here. So,
what's your priority?
Well, this is about my 18th combine. So the priority here is to make sure you try to get as much information as you can about the player. We're trying to find guys that are passionate about football. The medical part tells us if they're healthy enough to play. And then, you know, we want to walk away as coaches and try to answer the question by getting to know them as best we can. Are these guys who we want to coach? And so that's why this is really the first real big exposure for us as coaches in this evaluation process. And so our whole staff is here, and we're trying to get as much information as possible.
What do you look for when you meet with quarterbacks at the
time? Well, you're trying to look for all the intangible things that a quarterback does. You want to try to determine whether he's a good decision maker, whether he has a sense of timing. You know, the tape tells you whether he's an accurate passer or not. And then you just want to get a feel for, hey, is this the guy that we want to lead our team? And so some of it's subjective. Some of it really just comes by getting to know the player. And So, you know, we have a good idea of what a good quarterback is, and so we're trying to see those attributes in all these candidates. No, I think times have changed. We've seen him throw on tape. He's going to have a pro day where we can see him throw. It's certainly nicer when they do throw. You know, the more exposures you have, the more times we see the player doing what he does, it helps. But, you know, I think times have changed, so some do, some don't. Yeah, I agree with really both of your assertions there. I think Eli's – we're looking forward, moving forward with Eli. But certainly with the second pick in the draft, we want to draft a player worthy of that pick. You know, I think we've talked about it before, but the last time the Giants had the second pick in the draft, they picked Lawrence Taylor. The last time they had the third pick in the draft, they picked Carl Banks. And those were two franchise-changing players. And so – I think we've got to keep an open mind on this, and we certainly want to make our team better, and I think that's the approach that we're taking.
Can you afford to, though, to spend that number two pick on a player who maybe in an ideal world only
can play this? We're going to pick the very best player that we can pick at the number two pick. And, you know, we're coming into this. Again, we're looking for passionate players that want to be coached, that we feel good about, and we're trying to upgrade the whole team. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's interesting. He and Eli are in the building every day, and I got to hold back from talking ball with them. You know, so you know, I see him in the lunchroom after they've had their workouts, and so that's a little uncomfortable for me because they're so eager to get going. But I like what I've seen in Davis Webb. I went back and watched his tape again from college just to get reacquainted with him. I like what I saw on tape when he played. I had a chance to watch his practice tape, which has been terrific. We just don't have a large sample size of Davis Webb playing NFL football, and so. But I'm excited about, you know, what he brings to the table. I think we know what quarterbacks, and you know, again, I added Mike Shula, who again understands what a quarterback looks like and how to develop a quarterback. We know what we're looking for. We know when we see it. And so we want guys that are in the building that will develop the way that we sort of see them having to develop. And for guys that have been in the league a long time like Eli, we just want to try to maximize what he does well.
And what about the personality?
Yeah, that's hugely important. But I think your personality needs to be genuine. To your point, they're all different. And what's important is that they're the best version of what they are. They don't want to try to model themselves after somebody else. They want, and so that's what we try to do, maximize the best of who they are. Eli Apple. I gotta keep my Eli straight. Eli was in the building, so I had a chance to visit with him. And this is a clean slate deal. And so, you know, I think we all know that we need to get better. We had a great conversation. He's eager to get started when we do get started. And we're going to put the ball out there and let it rip.
Are you concerned about the stuff in his family circle in terms of?
No, I'm not concerned. And as I get to know him better and we start to develop those relationships that are necessary for a player and a coach and an organization, we're sort of starting at ground zero with that. And so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, he's been through, and to my knowledge, he's making great progress. So yes, and I don't know about the camp part of it yet.
He tweeted something about not playing in a preseason game.
Yeah.
Is that a discussion you guys have had already?
We haven't really been able to discuss football, and certainly we wouldn't have talked about any participation in training camp, you know. But, no, we communicate just – kind of on the surface like we have to with all our players, but we've developed a relationship that's pretty sound. Well, I'm encouraged by that because they feel like the best place for them to train is in our building. You know, I think we've created an environment now with the players where there's so many things you can't do in the off season. So guys go off on their own. They get trainers. They're trained away from the facility, and you don't know what's going on. Even though we can't work and, you know, there's rules with how much we can be around them, the fact that they're there tells me that it matters. And the fact that the two quarterbacks on our roster are spending time together every single day, I think that's a really good thing.
How do you stand with Brandon Marshall? What did you see from Brandon Marshall in the back and looked at what he was able to do
last year? Yeah, I mean, he's an outstanding player. He got hurt early, so there wasn't, you know, much that we could talk about, but those are contract deals. We'll talk about it at a later time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can see in college what a quarterback can do, and it translates to our game. And so the word spread is used a lot, like West Coast offense or 3-4 defense. There's many, many versions of those three elements of football. So, but we could see it. You know, obviously he was drafted for a reason, and you can see why on tape.
Last one.
Yeah, Evan, he was a player that we really liked. He's a pass-receiving tight end. He obviously had a really good first year. I mean, there's certain areas that he can improve, but certainly looking forward to working with him. Good.
All right, that's Pat Shurmur, Giants head coach. John Schmuck, Paul Dottino back with you in Indianapolis. You're from Gabe Gettleman in just a little bit. And, Paul, I think a few important things from Pat Shurmur. I'll let you go through your list first, some factual things on some of the players on the roster.
Well, I came up with four factual takeaways from what Shurmur said, and if you guys were listening, I'm sure you picked out the same things that I did. The Giants will take the best player at number two, certainly not playing his hand at all. And why should he?
And by the way, I want to point something else out, too. He mentioned two guys that the Giants, when they last picked this high, not including the Eli selection.
You heard of them?
Lawrence Taylor at two, Carl Banks at three, and he talked about trying to find the generational player in this draft. And he said there's always one in the draft. The tough one is finding him and identifying that guy. So that's what the Giants will try to do at number two.
And now for the second time that we've heard from Coach Pat Shurmur since he took the job, once again praising Davis Webb, said, I like what I've seen in Davis Webb. He said he'd seen his college tape. He liked it. Then he said of his practice tape, quote, was terrific about his practice tape. And then, quote, excited about what he brings to the table.
And then he spoke a little bit more on the side. I had a chance to sit in on that a little bit. He said he liked his size, his arm strength, the fact that he's a winner. Everyone he's talked to in the organization that was here last year says they think he has a bright future. At the same time, he also said that he is a very small sample size, which is something we've talked about here. So the features and the characteristics might be there. Whether or not he can do it once he gets on the field, small sample size, we'll have to wait and see. And Dave Gettleman also said, we'll hear from him in a second, that it's almost Davis Webb is almost like opening a Christmas present. You develop him over time, and when he's ready, that's when you unveil him.
Okay, number three from my list of Pat Shurmur outtakes, or should I say intakes, Eli Apple gets a clean slate. Mm-hmm. Which Dave Gettleman will also allude to in just a few minutes when we play that back, says he's starting from scratch. And how else can he do it? I mean, new coach, new GM, those guys simply want to move forward, and they've got to.
Yeah.
I mean, Eli Apple is a former first-round draft pick who's got a plethora of skills, an awful lot of talent. You don't just give up on a guy like that. You allow him to prove to you whether or not he belongs. And that's what the Giants are going to do.
And then finally, Odell Beckham Jr. said he's making great progress back from his ankle. He's rehabbing in California, but he comes back periodically for checkups. So good news on Odell. Couple other things from me. I'm not sure if you guys heard, but Sam Darnold announced that he will not be throwing at the combine. Shurmur said that's not a big deal to him. It's not like it used to be. They'll see him throw at his pro day, and they obviously have all the game tape on him as well, which is the most important thing. A couple other things. Personality matters as a quarterback. It's not just what you do on the field. You want to find the guy that's going to be the leader and spokesman in a lot of ways for your football team. So in that way, not just the 15-minute meetings here at the Combine are going to matter, but also when they get to have those private visits later on. You want a guy that makes good decisions on and off the field. He once again reiterated, and they've done this a million times already, so it's not news. Eli's the guy going forward. As for Davis Webb, you talked about him. The draft, find the generational player. Also something interesting he said in our side setting. He goes, I have no use for any skill position player on this team that doesn't catch well. And he said, including the running back. He says he wants his running back to be a big part of his passing game. So when you evaluate running backs, and for the people that love Saquon Barkley, he would fall into this category. He can. You would want someone that can catch the ball and be part of the passing game. And he also pointed out in that side session, Paul, his ideal scenario for a running back situation is having a 1 and a 1A. So yes. He's not a guy that would say, apparently, where you're going to run one guy 30 times and
very
run another guy
are.
5. Exactly, but I thought it was something significant that he said to us in the side session.
Yes, it does look like the Giants are already kind of halfway built that way anyway with both Perkins and Gallman in the backfield. They certainly will have to add somebody else if they don't retain either Vereen and or Darkwa. I do want to go back just for 1 second, though, about what you said about the personality of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Jim Zorn, the former NFL head coach and quarterback who was the personal tutor for Davis Webb going into last year's draft, he had said he thought that was the biggest thing that he wanted to develop in Davis when he tutored him, was to have command of the huddle and have a personality so that when people are in the huddle, they can listen to you, they can believe in you, they can have conviction that you're going to be the guy to lead them downfield. And Davis took that to heart, and that's something that he has strongly tried to develop besides whatever things we've seen on tape. That's an intangible factor, and I think it's interesting that Pat Shurmur also mentioned that same thing because, again, it was something that Zorn thought was a big key as he worked with Webb last year.
And, of course, putting Davis Webb aside, you take a look at the quarterbacks that are going to be available in this draft. You cannot really find a more diverse group of personalities than the group of guys in this draft class. Sam Darnold, very different than Josh Rosen, who's very different than Baker Mayfield. I think Josh Allen and Sam Darnold are probably the most similar of the group. And then, you know, the Lamar Jackson coming in, and everything I've heard about him has been very positive in terms of the type of guy that he is. So a very diverse group of people. And again, that's important when you're talking about the quarterback position.
The other comment I wanted to make off of your list, John, was when Shurmur talked about the dropsies. And by my unofficial count, and I've talked about this on the show before, I had over 50 drops by the Giants, you know, offensive unit this past season on Eli Manning. And, you know, again, everybody has a subjective way to grade drops. You know, I know that Amani Toomer and Plaxico Burress told me many years ago, if you get two hands on it, you better catch it. And if you don't, it's a drop. And that's as easy as it comes. And so I base my dropsies on their criteria since, you know what? Those are two of the most dynamic receivers this franchise has ever had. I had over 50 for Eli. I know some lists only have him for about 25, but it was over 50.
Hey, look, and Pat Shurmur talked about improving the team. I think he was specifically referencing the offensive line when he talked about it. But he said, look, you're going to add some people to help, but the players on the roster also have to play better. And you talk about the drops, you're talking about some of the more accomplished wide receivers in the league. Before he got hurt, Odell Beckham Jr. had drops.
Sure.
Brandon Marshall had drops before he got hurt. And Sterling Shepard had made some very difficult catches, but he had some easy ones that he could not come up with. So those are all things you kind of have to, you know, keep your eye on moving forward as the Giants try to improve and become a better team in 2018.
Yeah, the dropsies became a bit of a disease that kind of filtered throughout the entire offense.
And even Evan Engram, by the way, had a couple period of weeks in the middle of the year where he had some drop issues.
Wayne Gallman had trouble holding on to the ball.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get a couple calls in before we hear from Dave Gettleman. The number is 201-939-4513. Again, give us your one question, your one comment, your most important thing. We'll answer it, and then we'll move on to getting as many people as possible. Tony in D.C. has been holding on since the beginning of the show. Tony, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
So I got a question. I got a question for you for the Mr. Gettleman presentation earlier today. I know you guys probably saw it already. He said some fascinating things. First, he said that the number two pick has to not only be the second best player in this draft, but worthy of a number two pick in any draft. And he said that it has to be a player that you think has Hall of Fame potential. That's what Dave Gettleman said. Because you know, Super Bowls are more of a team thing. Hall of Fame is more individual. With that kind of standard, and I'll take it offline, what players, I mean, give me five if you can think of five, do you think have that kind of potential to be Hall of Fame talent? Otherwise, I think you'll trade the pick. But I think you can probably name some. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Appreciate it, Tony. Good call. And that was We'll call that a tease in the business, talking about what Dave Gettleman's going to mention later on. He did talk about that, and it was similar to what Shurmur said of finding that generational player that's worthy of that second pick. He mentioned Banks and Lawrence Taylor. So those are the types of things that you can talk about here as we move forward. And Paul, I think there are some players that people believe can be generational talents. I think depending on how you evaluate the quarterbacks, one of those guys could become a Hall of Fame-level quarterback, depending on how you develop them and you analyze them. Then I think the other guy that's fairly obvious, I think, is Saquon Barkley, where people think he's in the, top class of running backs that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years, the Ezekiel Elliotts, the Adrian Petersons, the Todd Gurley's, different type of runner, but the same level of runner. And then I think the other guy is Quentin Nelson, who's probably the best guard prospect we've seen in a decade. And I think if you're looking for that level of player and you take the position out of it, I think that's the group you're looking at.
You know what's funny about this, John? How many times over the last several years that, we have talked about the draft and we have said, hey, which wide receiver is going to go in the top five? Which two wide receivers might go in the top five? Not the case right now. There are no receivers who are going to go in this top five.
Nope.
Just
period. Or offensive tackles.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen. And so bottom line is that there is a spectacular headline-grabbing skill position at receiver. And you're right, offensive tackle, it's not going to happen either. And it's rather unusual in that this draft is not going to feature one of those guys at the beginning of the program when NFL Network kicks off the draft.
And we really haven't had a wide receiver go that high probably since the Odell year when Sammy Watkins went top five, right? I don't think anyone else at wide receiver has gone top five since then, have they?
Not that I can recall. And, of course, that draft, though, with Odell and Evans
and Mike
Watkins,
Evans, yep.
I mean,
that was a heck of a draft for wide receivers.
Landry, they hit big time, those teams.
And since then, wide receivers in the first round have honestly not really worked out that well.
Previous years, it was more so.
Correct. But, you look at Laquon Treadwell. He was a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. That hasn't worked out. Look at the three wide receivers picked in the top 10 or the top 15 last year. John Ross did not do a whole lot. Mike Williams did not do a whole lot. And then the third wide receiver that was in there, and the name escapes me, but there were three wide receivers that went in the top 11 last year. And none of those guys had really big-time rookie seasons, a lot of it because of injuries.
Amari Cooper, to me, was the last guy who kind of lived up to his potential. And I'm not even sure what number he was picked.
Amari Cooper, I think, was a sixth or seventh pick. But you know what? You look at Amari Cooper's numbers last year, Paul, they're disappointing.
Well, of course, they had some injury issues and some subpar quarterback play with the Raiders, too.
Derek Carr played 14 games.
Yeah, he was hurting, and he wasn't quite the same guy. But Amari Cooper, to me, is a guy who somewhat has lived up, if not all the way, certainly somewhat to his potential.
Absolutely. And by the way, the other wide receiver last year, Corey Davis.
Yes.
Fifth to the Titans. And he was actually healthy all year, or at least for I think he missed the first five or six games of the hamstring and came back. And he was never really that, super impactful guy. All right, let's go to our next call. We have Ken in New Jersey. He's been holding. Ken, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, fellas. How are we doing today?
Hi.
Doing well.
All right. I watched a documentary yesterday called OJ, Made in America documentary. I don't know if you guys have seen it. And some of the footage they were showing of OJ in college and in the pros, how he just dashed secondaries in the open field, really reminded me of Saquon Barkley. And OJ Simpson was the definition of a generational talent. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's fair to say we can't pass up on Saquon Barkley if he's there on number two.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And Paul, you can attest to the OJ comparison better than I in terms of running style. I did not see OJ live. I was too young, obviously.
I do remember OJ, but I have to be perfectly honest with you. I had not heard anybody, at least to my ears, compare Barkley to OJ Simpson. I really had not. And I don't see it. But here's what I will say. There's no question that much like OJ Simpson, Barkley does have the ability to turn in a 40 or 50-yard run on any snap and can take it to the house.
And he tries to, by the way.
There's no question. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, yes, he's what a lot of football people will call, with a baseball term, a home run hitter. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But I don't know that I see any other, quote, physical characteristics that are like O.J. Simpson.
All right, let's squeeze in one more caller before we get to Dave Gettleman. Let's go to Ken in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Ken. How are you, buddy? Or did we do Ken already? Let's go to Reese in Queens. I'm sorry, Reese. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, hi, guys.
What's up, Reese?
I think for the number two pick, we cannot pass on Saquon Barkley. Like, I've heard all these analysts like Colin Coward and Mike Mayock talk about we need to pick a quarterback, but Eli has another good years left in him. People act like he had such a bad season, but really it was the injuries and the offensive line that was the reason Eli didn't really play to his full potential. Because, you know, when you look at his stats, he still had 19 touchdowns and only 13 picks. Like, he didn't have a terrible season. So he has another good 2 or 3 years left in him, and we have Davis Webb. Like, Davis Webb was great in college. Like, you look at his numbers, like, he was one of the top quarterbacks in college when he was in college. Like, he was a very good player. So people always talk about he didn't draft a quarterback, but I don't see it. Like, I don't see why we have to waste his number two pick on a quarterback. I feel like if we had Saquon Barkley, we could basically have the top running back in the league, one of the top running backs in the league for the next 5 to 10 years. Plus, that would allow put pressure off of Eli. And basically, defensive coordinators can't double-team Odell. They can't double-team Evan Ingram. They'll have to either worry about Saquon or worry about, you know, the receivers. That would basically make the offense a lot easier for Eli. You know, that would make the most sense. Take Saquon Barkley and have an offensive threat for the next 10 years. Like, that would be the most sense. Like, I don't know what y'all think, but I think that would be the best pick.
All right. Appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you. Look, guys. The Giants are not locked into one player here, and you could say we're picking Saquon Barkley or bust. That's not what's going on. In fact, Pat Shurmur and you'll Dave Gettleman in a second basically both said the same thing. That's not the way they operate here. So there's a lot of other very good players in this draft, and I don't know how anyone could say how can you waste a pick on a quarterback if that quarterback could be your franchise quarterback for 15 years. That's not a wasted pick. All right, I don't care if he's not going to play for a year or two if Eli's here. And you'll hear Dave Gettleman say this. In fact, you will not hear him say it at the presser, but he said it at his little scrum with reporters afterwards. And this is pretty much a quote. If you sit there and you watch a quarterback and you believe he's your next Eli Manning and he's your generational talent, this is his quote. You take him. Period. That's what he said. That was on tape. It was on a recorder that I listened to, okay? That's what he said. So if you think that Barkley is the only answer here, you're not thinking deep enough and you have to take a longer look at some of the other options you might have at number two.
By the way, who says the Browns won't take Barkley at one?
I think that's very unlikely, but I have had that debate with Lance Meadow many times before. It's not impossible.
It could happen. I don't think it's going to, but right. It certainly could happen. And I do think this, in terms of the caller's comment, I do understand his philosophy in that he's saying you pair Odell in the passing game with Barkley in the running game, and now you have two home run hitters on the field on any given play.
And it makes sense.
And it creates a diverse and a dangerous offense where a defensive coordinator is going to have a headache having to worry about two guys who can take it to the end zone from anywhere on the field. I totally get that, which is why I believe Barkley would be in play for me.
Oh, of course he's in play. He's certainly an option, but to think he's the only option and you can't pass him up like any other pick would be a poor one is not the right way to look at this.
Right.
There are other options that can help the team just as much. All right, we'll get back to your calls after Dave Gettleman's press conference. Stay on the lines. We'll get back to you, I promise. But for now, here is Dave Gettleman addressing the media here in Indianapolis earlier this morning.
You know, as Pat said, you know, there's only so much to watch. And, you know, he hasn't had a lot of NFL experience. We liked him down in Carolina in the draft, had him pretty highly rated. So, you know, it's kind of like having a Christmas present or a Hanukkah present, and you get to unwrap it eventually. I thought I was done. I was excited.
You picked McCaffrey top 10 last year. A common theory that you can get running backs later in the draft. With Saquon Barkley, where do you fall on?
You know, top 10 later. And your name is?
Ryan from Indianapolis.
Ryan, okay, Ryan. You know, the bottom line is the guy a football player? I mean, you know, it's this whole myth of devaluing running backs, you know, I find it kind of comical. You know, at the end of the day, if he's a great player, he's a great player. It doesn't make a difference what position it is. But the other thing that sometimes listening to Pat, hey, Joe, how you doing? Good kid. At the same time, you know, listening to Pat, sometimes I think it gets lost in the sauce. Football's the ultimate team game. Now, you blow a whistle, 11 guys got to go out there, okay, both offense, defense, and special teams. And everybody's got to understand every player is important. And that's why when you're, you know, looking at the second pick of the draft like we are, you know, the first thing we have to determine is this guy worthy of being the second pick of any draft, not just this year's draft, of any draft. And then you make that determination and you move forward. So position, you know, I mean, Joe and Bill have seen my act down there. You know, if he's a great player, I don't care how stacked we are at that position, we're taking him. It's all about accumulating talent. Well, you know, really and truly, obviously I think about it. You know, it's a monster puzzle that we're putting together, and there's other things that you got to look at as well. You know, obviously we know that. You know, if you don't have a queue, it's going to be a long, long season. We know that, but you know, we'll come to the right conclusion. You know, I'll tell you what, it's an interesting class. I mean, all shapes, sizes, all flavors. I mean, this is like Howard Johnson's back in the day. You know, it's a real interesting group. I'm excited about meeting some of these guys on, you know, here. It's going to be fun. And obviously we'll be busy, you know, once the combine's over, visiting, and you have your 30 private visits. So that'll be part of the process. So it's a really interesting, eclectic group.
How important is that combine interview for quarterbacks?
You know, it's only 15 minutes. You know, Jordan, at the end of the day, you know, really and truly, can you really know anybody in 15 minutes? I mean, you know, it's like speed dating. You know, so, you know, at the end of the day, it's an introduction. I mean, like I said before, you know, we had him, you know, highly rated. You know, Pat thinks highly of him, and you know, there's just a small NFL sample size. I mean, you know, it's all part of it. It's a pretty good idea, Paul. You know, Kim, it's a hell of a question. I'm sorry, a good question. At the end of the day, if you watch football, okay, the NFL, you know, obviously the college game is, a lot of it's really different. If you watch how it's evolved, it's changed. I mean, style, whatever. But really and truly, if you watch the teams that win, in the NFL, you got quarterbacks that are making plays from the pocket, and you got offensive lines that are running old school NFL runs with little twists. So it's really imperative that, you know, everybody's got two O-line coaches. It's really imperative that they be great teachers, because like you said, Kim, some of these kids, I mean, there are guys that start for 4 years, and the only time they have their hand in the dirt is if they fall down. You know, they're 2 points the whole time. And occasionally you'll see them in a 4-point on the goal line. But, you know, your two O-line coaches have got to be great teachers. And then the other thing you have to do is you've got to get them as many reps as possible. There's a theory that you need 5,000 reps before you're really ready. I don't know if I subscribe to it, but if you think about it, now obviously that doesn't mean just on the field, that's practice as well. But, you know, it takes time. Think about all the positions on the field. What's the most awkward? You know, you think it's natural for a 320-pound kid to back up and do this? It's really not natural. They want to come off, and we teach them that. But it's become more difficult, but when you evaluate hog mollies, you have to be patient. You have to take your time. So you look for the things that all the great ones can do. Hey, Darren, how you doing? A little incognito with the beard there. So anyhow, you have to look at all the basics. Does he play with a base? Can he roll his hips? Can he do this? Can he do that? And you'll find those guys that are in 2 points that can do that.
Can you see all of that here?
A little bit. It's helpful, but it's really with the pads on. Just, you need the pads. You know, it's there's so much stuff going around. Are we open for business? I want to make any decision I make is going to be in the best interest of the New York Football Giants, plain and simple. So if someone makes me an offer I can't refuse, would I move back? It depends upon who's there. Because, again, if there's a guy worthy of being the second pick of a draft, and what we're basically saying, if we answer that question to the affirmative, you're drafting what you think is going to be a Hall of Fame player. Okay, so you can't get too cute about the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, do you see it, though? How do you see the market, the buyer, seller?
You know, we're going to find out, aren't we? We're going to find out. You know, you have to be practical. You have to be realistic, all right? When I watched the offensive line, you know, they had a ton of injuries. So, I mean, the last group that finished the season in Washington, what I really liked is they played tough. They were physical. They got after it, and they did a really nice job. You know, listen, I said in my opening presser, I'm not going to lie to anybody. I mean, give me a break. But we're gonna do it piece by piece, and if the right guy's there, we'll make a move.
How do you view Justin Pugh?
I'm sorry.
How do you view Justin Pugh?
He's a versatile, smart football player, and I mean, really, he's a four-hole guy, which is unusual. And you know, we're still in our evaluation process, and we're going to figure it out.
What's your thoughts on?
I'm sorry.
Through your evaluation process, in terms of, I know it's probably way too early to think about.
This is about 2.5 hours.
But for you personally, you come here with a pecking order at number two in your mind, and maybe you made a list. Or how do you approach?
No, it's we had our readings in February. Okay, we went through the first time. Now we're gathering information. We get to the draft in April. All right, we'll add all the new information. And then we do this crazy thing called have a discussion. Okay, so, you know, and you know, Pat's involved, obviously, very involved in the draft. And we'll talk it through. And at the end of the day, I believe in collaboration. I believe in communication. Everybody in that room is going to say their piece, and then it falls on me to make a decision.
Mike's
you know,
up.
But I have no preconceived notions. I just don't.
Where do you stand on Eli Apple?
Where do I stand?
On Eli Apple. I'm not standing up.
Okay, no.
Where do you stand on
Eli? It's a new day.
What you heard from him and what you
had, we had a nice visit. You know, Eli came in, and we talked for about 25 minutes, a half an hour, and had a good visit, and broke bread, so to speak, and I told him, it's clean, let's go.
All right, we're back, and now we're joined by Alex Marvez. That was Dave Gettleman, Giants general manager. Alex Marvez from Sirius XM NFL Radio. And Alex, Dave Gettleman had a chance to speak earlier this morning about the Giants. And one thing you spoke about at the podium and on the side was the value of the guard position.
Yes.
And that's going to be a topic not only in free agency but also the draft. Obviously, you see some very big contracts going to guards over the last few years. And you have Justin Pugh, Andrew Norwell in the free agent market, Quentin Nelson in the draft. I think the question that we have for you is, do you see among NFL executives the guard position catching up to the tackle position in terms of value? Is that almost as premium of a position as finding a good tackle these days?
I don't think so yet, although we do have elite-level players at guard, and I think those are the ones that end up getting paid. You know, your Kaliche Assimiles, your Kevin Zeitlers, and these players are allowed to hit the free agent market, which has created another dynamic, and I say that because not all offensive linemen are created equal under the collective bargaining agreement. Unlike other positions where there's a specialization, for example, second cornerbacks and safeties that are now different positions, right? In this case, tackles, guards, and centers all get grouped together. What's that? You know what I mean?
So I have no idea why.
Right. So what ends up happening is guards are able to hit the free agent market. We have too much money out there available in free agency. So guards, some elite-level guards, are getting some big-time cash. But I think it's really more of an anomaly. Just to those players, again, I'm not saying that they're not worth that type of money, but it is a function of the free agent system that we're seeing guards really start, select guards, start to cash in if they're able to get a bite of that apple. Andrew Norwell is going to be one of them. Mm-hmm. And listen, you know, the Panthers, they had a price on him. Mm-hmm. Dave Gettleman knows him, but I think he also realizes, wait, Andrew Norwell, he's an undrafted guy, if I'm not mistaken.
He was.
Bounced around the league a little bit. If you have the right offensive line coach, you have the right system, you can still win. I mean, let's be honest here. How many guys beside Nate Solder do we really mention on the New England Patriots as far as an offensive line goes? You know, so that's one of the things there. Again, it helps to have great talent at the position, but I wouldn't say you break the bank signing guards, nor do you use the number two overall pick in the draft on a guard.
You know, when you talk about Soldier, it's interesting because the Patriots have three free agent guards, and not only Soldier, but Fleming and Waddle.
Yes.
And there's no way I think they can keep all three of them. And we know how Bill Belichick gets very frugal with his money and likes to get rid of guys a year too soon rather than a year too later. Which one of the three or two of the three do you think he makes a bid to hold on to? Because I think the guy who gets away is probably going to get a good payday from somebody else.
Yeah, I would imagine that Nate Solder may be a real recipient for a franchise tag and keep him off the market because
wow. The
problem becomes, well, who do you replace him with? And there's nobody waiting in the wings for the New England Patriots. And if you have to bite the bullet and spend that amount of money on a tackle, there's a Patriots team that has managed their money well under the salary cap. You have a quarterback who does not play under a maximum deal. That helps a lot as well, mm-hmm. that Tom Brady is willing to accept Giselle money and you know, play for a reasonable contract. So, you know, in reasonable – I mean, he is a guy that is not driving up the price of quarterbacks. So,
right.
I mean, you think about it, and the fact that they go cheap at the quarterback position as far as a backup goes, I mean, they're saving money. When you have guys like Julian Edelman – you have guys like, you know, Brandon Cooks playing on a rookie contract. They've saved their money to be able to keep a guy, if need be, with a franchise tag. Let's not forget, too, I believe Alex Garcia, an offensive lineman, mm-hmm. they drafted last year, who
sure
they're
did.
Hoping to get some yield from in 2018. And that's one of the benefits of being a team that, you know, has built well, and also they turn over that roster constantly, is to be able to keep offensive linemen in the pipeline. Unfortunately for the G-men, not a lot of offensive linemen in the pipeline, but John Greco coming back does help, and it's a tough decision now. You know, Pugh, Richburg, who do you sign? What's the most economical type of thing? And, you know, and we try to judge from what Dave Gettleman did in Carolina, but it may be a different situation. Sometimes it's just the talent that's available. Trey Turner, for example, this guy, you know, because he's making so much money, the Panthers aren't going to be able to re-sign Andrew Norwell, right? But he spent on Matt Khalil because he wasn't able to get by on the cheap of the left tackle, and
yep.
Michael Orr's talent went down. But you look at what he did with Darrell Williams. I mean, that's a fantastic story. I mean,
day three pick,
and it just took some time. And I know that everybody wants to win now, but to me, let's give Dave Gettleman a draft or two to see what this offensive line looks like in a little bit.
You know, Alex, I'm talking about the veteran tackles who may or may not be available. A lot of people think Glenn is on his way out of Buffalo. Now, he's had foot injuries, but apparently with his money and his salary, a lot of folks in Buffalo think he's trade bait before this draft. How do you see that?
Well, then the question is, do you want a 340-pound left tackle? Because to me, he's a right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the thing. In Buffalo, it worked well at left tackle. But remember, when he was there, that was a different type of offensive system that they ultimately put in with the ground and pound of Greg Roman mm-hmm. and then passed on to Anthony Lynn. I don't think Cordy Glenn is an answer at left tackle because he's just so big. Just like I think Orlando Brown is an intriguing guy in the draft out of Oklahoma, mm-hmm. but I think he's a right tackle. Now, that's not a bad thing, but just,
no.
You know, we know about this round hole, square peg.
Yeah, a lot of people in North Jersey have been talking about that, as a matter of fact, for the last couple of years.
Yeah, so we see how that's going to play out this offseason, and if the Giants, if a new coaching staff, a new front office takes a different look at what they have at the offensive line position and recalibrates where the best five are on this team.
Based on demand and based on available talent, which obviously are the two things that go into how a market will play itself out, is this going to be a very hot offensive line market, you think, based on how so many teams need offensive linemen, Alex, and there aren't a ton of premium guys out there?
That's the problem. And you look at a team like the Houston Texans. You look at teams that have these deficiencies, especially those with a lot of salary cap money available, and it really does skew things. And so then at this point, what I think you're looking at, probably in the case of the New York Giants, I would imagine a little bit of piecemeal. Guys who are going to be playing on one-year type of contracts, and you hope to draft and then move players up as those players move on in their career. careers. It's not ideal, but that's likely what you're looking at. And I think at some point, too, the Giants, and I'm sure they've been talking to Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg and trying to figure out, okay, what's the sweet spot for money? Who can we re-sign? Who's more important? Because Justin Pugh does have some flexibility. Some teams may look at him as a right tackle candidate. Yeah. So, you know, does his market value then increase because of that? We also look at, you know, Weston Richburg. How important is a center? You saw that with them, the fact that they keep re-signing Ryan Khalil in Carolina and giving him shot after shot to keep playing. So you have to ask yourself, too, how important is that pivot? But I've been told by people who know more than me, like the Godfather Gil Brandt, that there's a great year for centers, and you should be able to get some good value in the middle rounds.
By the way, and Paul will be interested in this, too. You mentioned Orlando Brown. Measured in at 6'7 and 7/8 inches, so almost 6'8, 345 pounds and 35-inch arms.
And look at the wingspan on him right there.
85 and 1/8 inch.
They call him Zeus for a reason. Yeah. Or Zeus Jr., I should say, after his
Zeus
dad.
Zeus 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, great. I love it. Alex, we keep leaving out the third free agent on that offensive line, though, out of the conversation. That's DJ Fluker, who I think really deserves another shot based on what he did last year in the run game.
I'm a big fan of Big Fluke. I've known him since his days at the University of Alabama. It was a struggle for him. It was a struggle for him to win over these coaches and to get an opportunity to play. And you saw his frustration play out, on Twitter sometimes and having to quote biblical proverbs and things like this about staying strong through adversity. It's like, DJ, bro, you're just not playing. I mean, you know what I'm saying? There are other big world problems, but that'll tell you where his mindset was at. But when he got on the field, he was better. Again, system fit. And you may be able to get by with DJ Fluker on the cheap for a season. I don't know what the market will be for him. I think at this point, obviously not first-round money to that huge second contract, probably looking at 2-3-year deals elsewhere. But again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And when you don't have enough talent out there, you know, that's one of the things. A guy like that who's younger may get paid. One of the things I would look at, too, take a look at the Arizona Cardinals, Jared Valdir, Mike Iupati. Those are two players who are potentially on the cutting block. There are going to be others like this. What happens to Juwan James? Does he float your boat as a right tackle? There's been some thought the Miami Dolphins aren't going to bring him back. Jermon Bushrod is out there. These aren't the sexiest names, but it's the reality of what you've got right now. If you can get by for a year with a great offensive system and, you know, get the running game going, especially if that Saquon guy, you've heard about him?
Yeah.
If he's available at number two and he's there and all of a sudden you have Pat Shurmur working his magic with this team, you're going to make the offensive line look a lot better itself.
I got to ask you about Kirk Cousins, not because the Giants are going to go after him, but because who he signs with could affect maybe what team's trying to trade up to two for a pick. I think the Vikings are a great fit for him. Do you think they want to allocate that amount of cap space to him? And how does Cousins go about this decision? Does he want to win right away, or is it that's most important to him?
Or can you have your cake and eat it too?
Yeah,
I guess
sure.
Is the expression as they use. Because in the case of the Vikings, you're surrounded by a great team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it has a longer-term effect in that, okay, in 2019, you're going to be able to keep Anthony Barr. You're going to be able to keep Eric Kendricks. Are those fungible positions that potentially you could move on
Xavier Rhodes.
The draft this year? Xavier Rhodes is someone. You know, you're trying to look ahead here for a year.
Sure.
But you've got this window of opportunity right now. You have Dalvin Cook coming back. You have, you know, so you've got the marquee running back that really he hasn't had to work with. It's been running back by committee during his time with the Washington Redskins. You play inside 10 games a year. The 8 home games that the Vikings have, I guess if they go overseas, is different.
Of course.
But you get the point.
Yes.
And also playing the Detroit Lions twice a year. So favorable field conditions, something to be said for that.
Not to mention the defense. I mean, Kirk Cousins hasn't had a defense in Washington for 4 years.
So you look at all that, it adds up. It really does make a lot of sense for the Minnesota Vikings to make this move, compounded with the fact that Case Keenum reportedly not going to get franchise tagged and Teddy Bridgewater set to hit the free agent market. If the Vikings aren't trying to keep those two guys, that tells you maybe about how they feel about them. So you'd have to say the Vikings probably the leader in the clubhouse. But I don't know if you know this, the New York, New Jersey area, they have another team. They don't win a lot of games. They're you know, people sort of forgotten about them. And there's these newspapers that have this back page that they really seem to like to be on and maybe draw some attention to themselves. So I would imagine that.
Your thoughts on that?
maybe the Jets are going to be in the competition for him. See, what I wonder is there going to be a team that goes ahead and says, okay, we're going to be the front runner, we're out front, and then someone comes from behind and says, okay, well, they want to pay $29 million a season. We'll pay $31 million, and we'll guarantee blank, and all of a sudden, a deal is done.
And by the way, guarantee blank in the first 2 years, too. Right. Get it to them quick.
Right. So why show your hand now? Let all these other teams speculate. But I think, you know, listen, and I know that it's out there that Kirk Cousins wants to take a free agent tour – The odds of that are the same as Led Zeppelin getting back together and going on the road for about 70 dates. It ain't happening.
Okay? I'll take Genesis.
So Genesis, maybe you can get Phil back if there's a money grab, you know. I mean, always need that. Those other guys are working at Olive Garden right now, so you need to maybe help them out there. But the point is that, you know, look, I think they will know where Kirk Cousins is really quick. And then see what it does then, though, is assess the rest of the table for everybody else. What do the Broncos do? What do the Cardinals do? What do the Buffalo Bills do? What do the Jets do? All those things. And, you know, the way that the draft is looking, though, right now, if we were to say Cleveland takes, let's just say Josh Allen at 1, Saquon Barkley 2 to the Giants, 3, Bradley Chubb, 4 to the Indianapolis, and then 4, Cleveland back on the board, they're in a sweet spot to trade out to a team that needs a quarterback. Denver and the Jets among them, Tampa Bay goes Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, so we're starting to see these things get together. It's just it's a quirky time of year right now in the NFL because not a real top-heavy draft class, but a lot of good players that are really going to be compressed into, like, let's say 25 to 40 or even like 15 to 40 that we're going to almost get equal value for those picks.
And you went to exactly where I wanted to go. How heavy do you think the market for a trade-up for a quarterback is going to be as we get closer to the end of April? We saw what they got for the Goff pick, the Wentz pick. Is it going to be that type of year where teams are throwing around 5 to 6 picks to try to move up to 2 to pick a quarterback?
No, because you don't have to go. You don't necessarily have to unless you're absolutely in love with Josh Allen or absolutely in love with Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen.
So it's the volume of the quarterbacks hurts it.
Yeah,
it does.
Just having three quarterbacks out there and the way that it's playing out, Indianapolis isn't drafting a quarterback. The Giants, it's an interesting discussion and one that they're going to have to continue to have with them. And then at that point, if you decide to settle on a quarterback and there's a team that, you know, and you say, we're going to draft a quarterback, and you go to Eli and you say, well, listen, Eli, we were thinking this, but, you know, would you be interested in playing for the Broncos, you know, type of scenario, you have to at least run these things by you as a front office. And that's – and Eli's a big boy. He gets it. He handled it amazing. Dude, the guy's great, and he can dance as well. I mean, that's the thing that we didn't even know this stuff. We continue to learn more about him on a yearly basis. It's just remarkable. But I'm happy for Eli, too, that he's got Pat Shurmur coming in as his coach. You are going to see this team markedly improve from the chaos that just surrounded it the past couple – you know, the past season.
My final question, Alex. I don't know how much more time we have, John, but I just wanted to ask, which team do you think is the most likely to come from maybe the bottom third that is desperate to get one of those top four quarterbacks? And, again, we've heard about the Bills potentially throwing out 21-22
right,
to try to get up there, maybe to the Giants even.
And Cardinals at 15, another team.
They're midstream.
I don't think they'll trade because I think they're in retooling mode. We can't say rebuilding because they get sensitive, so we'll go with retooling, but even though I just did. But I think Buffalo, because they have 2-1s, 2-2s, 2-3s, that's a team that really seems ideal. Does anyone really think Tyrod Taylor is going to lead them anywhere? And the last time we saw Nate Peterman, he was chucking a duck, you know? I mean, those 5 interceptions against the L.A. Chargers, a huge mistake that, honestly, Sean McDermott got off the hook for with the way that the Bengals won in Week 17 and the Bills still able to make the playoffs. So they seem to me to be the one that really has the type of ammo to be able to move up if unable to sign a free agent. And we right now hear no free agent names connected with the Buffalo Bills. We just haven't really heard that type of thing.
Well, they usually don't spend big money to go get somebody. That's why.
A different regime. Different
That's true.
Now,
that's
know?
True.
And listen, when you're how many years removed now from Doug Flutie or Jim Kelly? I mean, when was the last time they had a franchise quarterback? I mean, because they've got other things that are strong, but you still got Shady McCoy, you know, pretty good offensive line. They got to look at the wide receiver position, but obviously defense is a strength for this team. You're just lacking that quarterback. And until they get that, nobody's going to catch the Patriots. Think
right.
about this. We're on, what, 18 different starting quarterbacks for the Miami Dolphins since Dan Marino? 18 different guys for them. And that's not an exaggeration. 18 different players have started at QB. Look at the Jets and what a mess that is. Until somebody gets that franchise quarterback, each year just punch the ticket for the Pats to win the division and usually get home field advantage. And then how do you beat them round two? They're on the way to the championship game and usually a Super Bowl. It's an incredible path because these teams can't get out of their own way. Let's see if the Bills take some steps to change that.
Alex, great stuff. We appreciate the time as always.
Check is in the mail as usual. I understand.
Alex Marvez, SiriusXM NFL Radio. We'll be back with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. He joins us next on Giants.com on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Man, Combine Week, one of the craziest weeks of my life. All I remember is just the crazy meetings, being nervous, all the crazy tests, all the crazy questions. But my biggest memory was getting the cold tub every single night. Every single night, cold tub, 10 minutes, making sure my legs was right. And then once the field day came up, ready to do drills, I was fresh, ready to go. I ran one of the fastest times at the Combine, so I give all the credit to that cold tub. So Combine Week was a crazy week. It's biggest blessing, and definitely a week I won't forget.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Nice to meet you. How you doing, guys?
Hey.
Ready for some football?
I think the Giants organization does a great job.
Come on, buddy. Good?
Yeah.
Glad to see you out here, man.
I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Talking to you.
Productive. We'll start free agency.
I feel like especially the younger generation, they're going to be the next up. So to start them off early and be able to give back to them and show them the way, it's just setting us up for the future.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You guys get a gift bag?
Yeah.
You got a gift card in there and then get some games this Christmas.
It's really important for us to continue to do that.
All right, we're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and our rather tall guest. I'm trying to sit up as high as I can here to try to measure up to Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Steve does join us from time to time over the course of the year. They do a great job in free agency and the draft. In fact, if you guys want to go online and subscribe, and Steve can tell you how, your draft guide and your free agent guide out there right now is as complete a guide to the players available as you can get. Why don't you tell the fans how they can find it if they're interested?
Sure. Well, much appreciated. The free agency guide is a new deal for us this year. We wanted to provide something similar to our draft guide. We think it's really great. And you just subscribe to one thing, which is called PFF Edge or PFF Elite, and you get all of our stuff. And it's over at profootballfocus.com. Look for Edge. You'll get our draft guide. You get the free agent guide and our quarterback annual, the first time we've ever done this, the most detailed breakdown on NFL quarterback. So profootballfocus.com.
All right, well, let's talk about that. And you mentioned the quarterback annual, and we just talked to Alex Marvez, and we discussed how the Kirk Cousins domino can affect the rest of free agency. I know you guys evaluate him kind of in the middle of the league in terms of quarterbacks. How do you see him impacting whatever team he does arrive to? Can he bring a team like the Vikings into the Super Bowl conversation? They're already pretty close last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Cousins, you summed it up as far as he's a middle-of-the-pack guy for us, but we've seen him have high-end seasons. When he has high-end seasons, I think you have to look at his supporting cast. And he's had a couple years in Washington where he had Jordan Reed at his best. We had DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon. Yep. Last year they lost those guys. Reed's banged up. The stats weren't as great. So I do think Cousins is one of those mid-tier guys, kind of like an Andy Dalton. Probably a step up from Andy Dalton, but similar to that guy. Similar to Sam Bradford, where if everything around him is great, the offensive line, the playmakers, all of his weapons, he could put up good seasons. But I don't think he's the guy that's going to completely change a franchise and start him from scratch. That's why Minnesota might end up being a pretty good spot with those playmakers.
See, when you talk about the fact that he's not an elite guy, Steve, to me, that's why it's very difficult to gauge which of the top draft choices are going to go on potential franchise QBs in the draft, because you're not talking about elite guys in free agency. Yet, there are some teams who may just want to throw money at them because, the guy played in the league before. We'll take a shot.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the whole value thing has to come into play. I mean, in a perfect world, you would say a mid-tier quarterback deserves $12 to $15 million, and you can build around that, but we know that supply and demand doesn't work that way, so Cousins is being rumored to be getting 30. Yeah. And I think you really have to say, am I really going to be able to build the team around him to justify that 30, or when I have to commit the 30? So I do think you have to look to the draft and say positional value, the fact that you can save a little bit of money on a Sam Darnold or a Baker Mayfield. And yes, there's a little bit more of an unknown after seeing Cousins and knowing what he can do, but I think that's why the draft can potentially be so valuable.
No question about it. Now, let's take a look real quick at this offensive line free agent class, okay? The one thing I think you guys do a great job of is breaking down a position that you have to look at a lot of film to know really how good some of these guys are. How do you break down this free agent class at both tackle and guard? Who are some of the top guys available that you like?
Yeah, I think the high-end names, you got Nate Solder, tackle from the New England Patriots, but even then, he's a guy, he's not a dominant left tackle. I think he's a solid left tackle. Beyond that, it's really a pretty thin tackle class. Inside at guard, Andrew Norwell was the big name for the Panthers. You know, a guy that's graded well for four straight years, pretty good pass protector. He can make all the blocks in the run game. And one of our top centers, Weston Richburg, you take the injury concerns out of it, and he's one of the top players as well. And a Justin Pugh, again, two guys from the Giants and, an offensive line that's had a lot of question marks, but when those guys are healthy, they're pretty good pieces. And actually, when you stack up this free agent class, whether it's whether this is good or bad for Giants fans, those are two of the better potential options.
Well, see, that brings me to my question, Steve, because if you're the Giants and you know that there have been some ups and downs with these guys, they're known quantities. Are you better off hoping for a bounce-back year from a known quantity, or are you better throwing money at somebody else, or for that matter, drafting somebody else?
Well, based on the rest of the draft class, the rest of the free agent class, I don't know if there's a lot of guys that you want to throw a ton of money at. We mentioned the Vikings a little bit earlier. They're the kind of team that had a really bad offensive line in 2016, and last year they threw money at a guy like Riley Reiff, and they did go the free
Remmers.
Agent route, and Mike Remmers, and they did improve a little bit. I use the word creep back toward average. That's my Giants offensive line strategy. You don't want to be the worst bottom five offensive line. You want to creep back toward that average mark, and I think average is good
top
in the
20.
NFL. Yeah, that's what you need. So I think there is an element of go get yourself an average tackle, go get an average guard, and draft and try to develop guys. But there's not a lot of good offensive linemen anywhere in football right now that's really thin.
But in this draft class, there actually is a decent number, I think, of interior offensive linemen that people are liking for that 20 to 35 type of area, end of the first round, top of the second round. How do you separate the Billy Prices from the James Daniels to the Will Hernandezes to the Isaiah Wynns? How do you separate those guys, and do you think any of them will be around when the Giants pick at the top of the second round?
Yeah, I think there'll be some guys available. I shouldn't be that harsh on offensive linemen. This is last year's class, I think, was pretty bad, I think,
yes,
especially a tackle. This year's class is much more well-rounded. You mentioned a lot of good names there. Will Hernandez from UTEP, we absolutely love. He's been our top-graded guy.
Me too.
Our top-graded guy for two straight years. He's given up three pressures in 2 years. He's a mauler in the run game, showed well at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
I think he's a borderline first-round type of guy. The only question with guard is the whole positional value thing. How high do you want to take a guard? But, you know, to get back toward average, you need some good players there. So I love Hernandez. Billy Price is a pretty good athlete. I think he's not as productive as some of the other guys. Daniels is an interesting guy if you're in a really zone-heavy scheme.
Price can play guard too, though, right?
He's got some flexibility. And I like James Daniels. He's got good athleticism for his zone scheme. Frank Ragnow from Arkansas, he's a name that I think we're higher on than most at PFF. He's been our top-graded center two straight years now. Little injury-riddled season last year, but on the field, really powerful. Smooth pass protector. Really enjoying watching some of these interior guys.
Paul's going to ask about the tackles in a second because I know he's excited about them. You mentioned positional value. How do you guys view, and have you been able to quantify it at all, the value of the guard position? Because I don't think anyone would argue that in terms of what they do, Quentin Nelson is as good at what he does as anyone else in this draft class. He's unbelievable. He's a great player.
Right.
But do you get the value out of a guard to make him a top five pick? Is it worth it? Have you guys been able to quantify that at all?
We're starting to. We have years of data, and we're just scratching the surface. We have a kind of a brand new analytics team, and they're doing a lot of that work. The early returns on that work are tackles give up a far higher number of pressures. Guards don't give up a ton of pressures. Tackles, and intuitively we know this. The league has known this for a few years, that tackles are more valuable than guards, but we're starting to put numbers to it. And I do think you have to look at, say, like a Brandon Scherff of the Washington Redskins. Nice player, but number six overall, I don't think you're getting that value. So I would even look at, and we've talked about this internally, Quentin Nelson, who I love, great guard. Would he be better at tackle?
And a lot of people think he could go out to right tackle. His arm length measurements were actually pretty good.
And now my debate is, what's the difference between an average tackle and a really, really good guard?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this strategy of creeping back toward average, if you could find an average tackle, that is extremely valuable in the NFL. I know a lot of offensive line people who are like, no, you can't move guards to tackle, and it's not a traditional thing. But we're thinking outside the box here. Positional value is a real thing, and I do think there's something to it. I even said it with Dallas and Zach Martin. You know, he could probably be an average right tackle. He's an elite guard.
Yep.
Probably could be an average right tackle.
I think you're right.
And I think there's something to at least consider there, thinking outside the box as you're trying to find the best five.
You know, we started asking you about some of the free agent tackles and the prices that they're going to get, but with at least three premier tackles in the draft, in McGlinchey, Williams, Brown, maybe one or two others, depending upon your viewpoint, how do you think that will affect some of the prices that some of these offensive tackles will get in free agency?
It always affects it. Supply and demand for those tackles, it's going to be high. I don't know if New England's going to look to franchise Nate Solder, but he really is the top option at tackle from a free agency standpoint. I do like this tackle class better than last year. McGlinchey, I think, has all the tools. I do have some question marks about all these guys. Connor Williams is a little bit undersized compared to some of those other guys, and he didn't have a great season last year at Texas. I know some people like him at guard, but again, our whole discussion is why I'm not moving a guy into guard. If he has a chance to play tackle, he's playing tackle.
It. Absolutely.
I love Connor Williams. I like McGlinchey. Orlando Brown is massive. And I think, you know, once he gets his hands on people, he's great. You know, he might struggle with some speed rushers. So there, I think there is some good top-end talent here, but they all come with their own little question marks as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when you look at this tackle class, can you find tackles in the second or third round here? Or once you get past those first three guys in the first round, are you looking at a pretty big drop-off after that top group?
I think there's more developmental type guys. The kid Okorafor from Western Michigan, I think he's gotten a little bit more hype maybe than he deserves.
How about DeMarco Jones from Ohio State?
I think he fits that developmental type of role. I think we have him in the second round as a guy as well.
Crosby, Oregon. How about him?
Crosby's another guy. He's just big, and he's like Orlando Brown light kind of, you know, big guy that the NFL is going to say is a right tackle, which I don't differentiate between left and right tackle. Right tackles in the NFL these days, you got to block Joey Bosa, Von Miller, Cameron Wake.
That's true.
You do not put. I mean, we could have a whole show on this, guys. I'm not. You do not say this big slow guy go to right tackle where you have to face the league's best bat pass rushers. They're both equivalent positions.
Oh, they'll find you if you try to hide them.
Oh,
they'll
yeah, absolutely, you. Absolutely. Justin Houston, Khalil Mack, all these great guys are rushing off the left side against right tackles. But, yeah, I like DeMarco Jones. Long story short, I like him. He's a good developmental type guy. And if you do miss out on those first-round caliber guys, I think he might be a key name.
And frankly, I thought Crosby looked really good at the Senior Bowl, to be honest with you. I thought he, as of the tackles there, he probably did as well in the one-on-one pass rush drills as any of the players there.
He's been productive in our system as well. And okay. I think the concern with him, similar, I call him Orlando Brown light, maybe the quickness off the edge will get him every now and again. But again, you don't need – not every tackle is going to be the dominant, classic, you know, Orlando Pace type left tackle. If you get a pretty good player, you know, that's valuable in the second.
And everyone is Orlando Brown light, by the way, because nobody's Orlando. Yes. No one's that big.
Listed at 340,
good point, John.
But, you know.
Can I flip it to defense for a second? Because sure. A lot of folks obviously know the Giants are thin at linebacker. I mean, they don't have many guys coming back in terms of guys who are signed. Based on the free agent class at linebacker compared to the potential first, second, third round linebackers in the draft, which way would you lean to if you wanted to fortify the position?
Is this the year we're drafting a linebacker?
I don't think it's going to happen, number one, but I could see it, number two.
I've been here multiple years now asking, is this the year for linebacker? Last year,
not first round, Steve.
Is it going to be
not
Zach
first
Cunningham?
Round.
Look, I like the draft class of these linebackers. Roquan Smith, a great chase and run guy for Georgia. He's got the coverage skills. He might be a potential top 10 type of guy. Top
is he more
15.
Outside or inside guy, you think, Smith? Because he's not that big.
He's, I mean, traditionally an outside guy, but you're talking about a lot of nickel and dime being played in the
of
NFL.
Course.
Either way, he's playing in the box, and he's going to have to take on blocks a little bit. So, I think Roquan's a guy. Tremaine Edmonds is just this really unorthodox linebacker. It's kind of like an old-school Giants linebacker. He's 6'5", 250, with the old 250-pound cutoff that Giants linebackers needed to have in, like, the Parcells-Belichick days.
Yeah.
He's that
the
guy.
Good old days.
Yeah. When stopping the run really meant something back in the day. But Edmonds is – he's only, like, 19 years old. He's 6'5", 250, and he might outgrow the position, but he's just a really good athlete, really long. He's got a lot of skills there. And the kid who's supposed to blow up the combine, Leighton Van Der Esch from Boise State. He's really quick, got good size, got good length. I think he contributes in the pass game, in the run game. Those are all three-down guys, and I think that's, you know, some of them might fall to the second, and that is, you know, a good value for those guys in a pretty good class.
How do you – go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to follow up with one kind of unorthodox question. How did you view the one-handed linebacker?
Very well. And, I feel like you have to put that caveat in. You know, he has one hand. And the issue there is, you know, does it show up on the field? So I don't know that he had a ton of dropped interceptions necessarily.
Shaquin Griffin, by the way.
Shaquin Griffin from UCF. Sorry.
My bad.
And he was outstanding at the Senior Bowl. His tackling numbers aren't bad. I mean, the kid is a really good player. And the fun part about him, he's a good linebacker. He might be – his best thing might be pass rushing, but he's only 220 pounds. So forget the hand thing. He's actually at this crossroads of what's his best skill set. And UCF tried to use him in coverage a little bit more last year. It works pretty well. He's a pretty good athlete. I just think he's a great football player. I don't know what ends up happening to him on draft day, but I know he wins practice player of the week at the Senior Bowl. He's always graded well for us. He graded well in our Senior Bowl grading because we grade every snap there. And he just continues to produce.
And in the game, by the way, at the Senior Bowl, played safety, linebacker, and defensive ends. Like
yeah,
you said,
I love it.
He can go all over the field. Overall depth of both the free agency class and the draft class. Are we looking at deep classes in both these situations, or are they top-heavy in your opinion?
I think this draft is a little bit top-heavy. And I have, there's been a couple years, the last couple years, I think the statement I always come back to is I don't think there's a big difference between 25 to 80. I mean, if you're picking in the 25 to 80 range, the last few years the draft was so deep, it felt like you're getting a good player there, and especially at corners last year, you were getting starters in the third and fourth round. This year, as I'm putting my draft board together, you know, it feels a little bit thinner. You know, is this guy really the 50th best player in the draft, in our opinion? Seems like a stretch. Is this guy really number 75? So I'd say it's a little bit more top-heavy.
Where do you see the drop-off?
I would say right around 20 to 25. And I think that's
wow.
Again, that's different. It's not a massive drop-off, but just compared to different years, where if you were, say, the Browns the last couple of years and you had those top picks, I would suggest, hey, why don't you just trade back and accumulate as much as you can in 25 through 85. This year might feel like that year. We just go up, get one of those top players in the top 20. We still have more work to do in the class, but that's my initial impression.
John, we ask Steve every year for the Giants pick, so we have to ask him now. If you have the two, and I'm going to assume that the Browns take a QB. Let's just do that for the sake of argument, because there are so many that seem to be up there, and Josh Allen seems to be targeted to them. Who's it going to be?
Okay, so I'm a Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold guy.
I know you are.
So am I. We're on the same page, Stevie. I'm with you on that.
And I'm more a Josh Allen guy, but I'm not taking him either.
I just can't. I cannot take Josh Allen that high with those question marks. I get the top-end plays. I get the arm.
Understand.
I get all of it. It's the traditional quarterbacking things that I think it's too much of a stretch there. I'm a big Sam Darnold fan. I know he wasn't great at times last year. I think Darnold would be a really good fit there. I just think his high-end play that he showed at such a young age is going to translate to the NFL. You just have to manage some of those poor decisions he had last year. And I'm a Baker Mayfield guy because I think he got pigeonholed as this short guy without a great arm, and people were nitpicking the wrong stuff. He has all the NFL tools minus height. Everything else he does is outstanding. Decision-making, accuracy under pressure, makes plays inside and outside of structure. I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan. So take Baker first, Darnold second if you're the Giants. And I wouldn't hate if they got the next Eli Manning, Josh Rosen, because I feel like he's got some of that volatility that Eli showed through.
Would you disqualify Barkley from that conversation?
Back to the positional value thing, I have
okay.
to. I just have to. The risk of missing on a quarterback is actually not that great, but the value of hitting on a quarterback is so far exceeds what a running back's going to hit. You have to take a shot on the quarterback position because it is that valuable. And to me, if you think any of the quarterbacks can be as much as a top 15 guy in the draft, a top 15 NFL quarterback far exceeds the value of, say, a top 5 running back. And I think you just have to weigh those things against
each other. Interesting way to
look at it. Hey, just look at how much money Kirk Cousins is going to get versus how much money Le'Veon Bell is going to get. Seriously, look at the best running back versus the middling quarterback. I want to follow up on Mayfield because you guys quantify this stuff well.
Yeah.
You mentioned the height thing. You watch him on tape, and I probably watched 6 or 7 games from him last year. You don't see him get passes batted down at the line of scrimmage. You really don't. Not a lot, more so than any other quarterbacks. Do you think, though, and I think we've seen this with Russell Wilson a little bit, his vision in the middle of the field be compromised a little bit because of his height? Is that, you think, a potential issue for him where he's going to have to move the pocket more to see down the field who's open?
I think that's a bigger issue than the batted passes, yes. I mean, batted passes are, I mean, it's a fraction of plays,
yeah.
And that's what people seem to focus on with height. Mm-hmm. I do think that's a bigger issue. When you watch Drew Brees, he's up on his tiptoes, and he's found ways to mitigate the fact that he's only 6 feet tall. Russell Wilson makes more plays outside the pocket than most other quarterbacks. So I think there's a little bit of that to Baker Mayfield. He's still a good middle-of-the-field thrower. But if there is that Josh Allen advantage, it is the fact that he can see over the line. He might miss the throw that he sees.
Yeah, I know.
But he can at least see it. But he can at least see it. So,
I
yes,
get it.
I think every short quarterback has to have exceptional other skills to maybe make up for some of those deficiencies. And I would put Baker in that class of a Breeze or a Wilson. Not saying he's there, you know, that caliber player, but he's the type of player that can make up for the height with his other skills.
And this question is actually for Paul. If we take quarterbacks out of the mix, Steve.
Yeah.
You're not taking one, and you're sitting there too, and you're not trading back, and you're taking a player. What position player, based on their ability and positional value, do you think has the biggest impact for the Giants at two if it's not a QB?
I have to look, and I don't think anybody else is going to say this name, but Maurice Hurst from Michigan.
Really?
Defensive tackle.
That blows me away.
Aaron Donald type, huh?
He's an Aaron Donald type. Look, if you could get Aaron Donald, Aaron Donald's a number one overall pick the way he's played on the field. I'm not saying Hurst is Donald.
No doubt.
But from a pure PFF production standpoint, he's been in a different level in our 4 years of grading. He's 280 pounds, which I don't think matters anymore. I don't the fact that he's 6'2", 280, everybody says they're undersized. There's Grady Jarrett. There's Aaron Donald. There's plenty of undersized guys that are penetrators and disruptors. I think Maurice Hurst is up in that caliber of player when it comes to top five or top ten picks, especially in this draft. If you want the versatile positional value stuff, you look at a Derwin James at safety. And safety is not a valuable position, but I think James is a very Landon Collins-ish type of player. I think when you play the game like Landon Collins at safety, that's extremely valuable.
How about Fitzpatrick?
And Fitzpatrick was the other guy I was going to mention. See, Derwin James and Micah Fitzpatrick and all their versatility I think is well worth
it. That's where I would have lost the bet because I thought you would have said Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, and I might take Derwin James over him,
wow,
to be honest, because Derwin is 6'3". He's going to blow it up over here. He's 6'3", 215. I've seen him cover tight ends. He can cover slot receivers with unbelievable quickness for a guy that's 6'3", 215. If you made him an edge rusher, he would be successful, which is insane for a safety. It's not even something that they do, and he can play the run.
Betcher's going to do a lot here. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to do a lot.
If I had Derwin James, you just make him the defensive weapon. If you put him in a Landon Collins type of role, he's not an Earl Thomas, just like Landon's not, but Landon plays a lot of the two high looks where he's working downhill in the run game, working downhill in the pass game. James has a lot of those plays on his tape, and I think he could do a lot.
Steve, enjoy the next few days. We'll learn a little bit about more of these guys and what you've seen on film, and then we'll talk to you before the draft, see where you land.
Yep, sounds great. Thanks.
Great stuff,
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus. Appreciate him joining us, and next we'll be joined by Dane Brugler. We'll be right back.
I'm going to tell you something. One of the funniest things was Deion Sanders. Okay. Of course, is he going to run? Is he going to run? So he shows up and he says, I'm running 2:40s, and that's it. He gets up there and he runs his first 40, and he runs like a 4.28. It's some ridiculous thing. So we figure he's not going to run the second one. Oh, no, he said, I'm running the 40s. He comes back, and the way it's set up, when you finish your 40, if you continue straight, you can run right out of the stadium, all right? He comes up for his second 40. He takes off. He runs about a 4.25, and as he's running away, he's waving at us. We all gave him a standing ovation. It was hysterical. It was hysterical. That's one of my favorites.
It's always important to give back to the community simply because without their support, we wouldn't be the Giants. The community always supported the Giants in everything we do, and our fans are always going to be behind us, and you always have to give back because giving back one time may help that little kid be motivated, and they are the future, so we have to give back and motivate younger people to become successful and do positive things in their lives.
One, two, three. Coaches all around me, coaches all around me.
I think we have a huge responsibility with the platform we have to really reach out to people in all walks of life. And, I personally have a passion for kids and dealing with kids.
C-D-E-D.
People want to be around athletes, want to see what we have to say, and I want to be one of the guys that give them something that they can really take.
Good job, good job.
We're back on Big Blue Kickoff Live from Indianapolis at the Combine. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and now we're joined by one of our regulars, a friend of the program, Dane Brugler, NFLDraftScout.com. We stole him over from the Dallas Cowboys. He'll be with them all week on DallasCowboys.com. But Dane has been watching these players all year long. When we're watching NFL games, he's watching college games. So you won't find anybody with a better feel for this draft class. And Dane, let's start at the top because that's where the Giants are, second overall. Obviously, it'll depend what the Browns do. When you take, and we asked Steve Palazzolo this question, when you take positional value and player ability into consideration, who are the guys that you think should be in the mix for the Giants at number two?
You'd start a quarterback. And like you said, depending on what the Browns do at one, let's just say they take a quarterback, whether that's Sam Darnold or whoever they fall in love with, then you're the Giants. You're sitting there at two. Is there someone you love there? And it could be a Josh Rosen. It could be Darnold if he doesn't go one. You better love the guy if you're going to take him number two. And I think Dave Gettleman said it this morning that if you miss on a quarterback,
you're finished.
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't love the guy, then you go in a different direction. You go with a Bradley Chubb, who, to me, I think a lot of people are kind of writing off because they A lot of money invested in the defensive end position. But Dave Gettleman didn't sign those contracts. You know, we never know what – with the pass rush, as important as it is in today's NFL and as important as it is to Dave Gettleman, I think Bradley Chubb is absolutely in play there. And Saquon Barkley, running back, is going to be something that I know – I'm sure you guys have talked about a lot, and that's where you factor in position value. And does a running back warrant a pick that high? And I think it depends on the situation of the team. You know, 2 years ago with Zeke to the Cowboys at four overall, that made sense. The Jaguars last year at four overall, Leonard Fournette, that made sense. This year with Barkley at number two, I think you can make a case, depending on, you know, what the Giants do in free agency and how they feel about some of these quarterbacks, you could make a case that Saquon Barkley would be the smartest pick there at number two.
Let's talk more about Barkley, because there are so many people who view him as a franchise guy who's going to be incredible. Then there are those who say, you know what, there were too many holes he missed at Penn State. Maybe he could have been even better.
Yeah.
And if the offensive line is suspect, you won't get maximum value out of him.
And he also bounces it too much, maybe, too.
He's a home run hitter, and he looks for that home run. And sometimes he needs to be okay taking singles and doubles instead of looking for the home run. And I think that is the biggest, if you're going to, you know, put some weaknesses attached to Saquon Barkley, it is, you know, the running back specific traits. He's a freak as an athlete, 233 pounds. And what he does, they might name the combine after him by the time we leave. he's going to be really impressive with what he does at that size. And so just he's a freak athlete, better athlete than Ezekiel Elliott that was, than Todd Gurley. But where I think I give Zeke and Gurley the edge, just in terms of, you know, the top running back prospects we've seen the last few years, the running back specific traits, the vision, the patience, the decision making. Mm-hmm. And not to say Barkley's not deficient in those areas. He's just not as he doesn't grade out as high as maybe –
not as polished.
Right. And some of that's just – I'm not sure how much better his vision's going to get. You know, it's a lot of that's instinctive. And, again, he's not – he's more average than he is above average in those areas. And that's not a knock against him. He's still going to be a very productive back. I want him on my team. But if you're going to poke some holes on him, I mean, he's not a perfect prospect.
Now, here's the one thing that a lot of people don't even talk about, and that's pass protection. Because
right.
if you have a 37-year-old quarterback in the pocket,
mm-hmm.
and Barkley's going to get a healthy amount of playing time out of the box,
right.
he better be able to pick up a blitz.
Absolutely. And you watch the Pitt game early in the year, he missed a few assignments. There were a few times where he didn't get to his landmark, and the rusher was able to get past him and put a hit on the quarterback. But as the season went on, he got better and better and better. And so I don't think he's necessarily on the Zeke level in terms of being as good without the ball in his hands as a blocker and as a pass catcher. But he's not below average in those areas. I feel comfortable with Zeke as a pass protector and as a receiver.
Now, if the Giants don't go Barkley at two and they decide to wait, what's your take on the guys that could be available at the top of the second round or the top of the third round at that position specifically? Because, frankly, while they're not as good as Barkley,
right.
if you can grab Darius Geis or Ronald Jones at the top of the second round, you're doing pretty well.
Bingo. And that's part of the conversation with Barkley. I mean, it shouldn't be, you know, when you have the number two pick, you should take the best player available that's going to impact your team.
Agreed.
But it does have to kind of impact the decision of making a little bit, because when you look at this running back class and how deep it is, and even if a Geis or a Ronald Jones go in the late portion of the first
which
round,
they could.
Possible, Sony Michel could still be there. You know, and Nick Chubb, one of these other running backs, it's a very deep group. So, you know, I had the same conversation with, you know, the Browns. They'll be talking about Barkley. If the Giants pass on two, maybe the Browns take him at four. But, again, they have the 33rd and 35th. You know, if they sandwich that Giants pick, they could go running back with one of those two picks. So it's an interesting discussion because it factors into the Barkley discussion. Again, you take the best player at two, but if you don't take Barkley, you feel awfully good about who's going to be available for you in the second round.
You know, if the Giants decide to, you know, go Barkley, whoever it is, that's not an offensive lineman at number two, because most people think Quentin Nelson, even though he's a great prospect,
right.
at two you can't take a guard. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Number one on his board, by the way.
He's the best,
and
Nelson.
I get it.
He's the best football player in this
and
draft.
And I get it.
But, right, positional value, it factors in.
You have to.
Yeah,
you have
you
to. It's just, you know, football 101 says you can't take a guard there. It's hard. But if the Giants know that they've got to improve the offensive line,
right.
are there in your mind guys in the second and third round that would be significant upgrades over what they have now that they could wait and maybe get one of those guys there, like maybe a Will Hernandez at the top of round two?
What I'm worried about with this offensive line group is, you know, there are 32 teams that need offensive line depth.
Everybody does.
Exactly.
You're right.
So
you're right.
I think we're going to see second-round offensive linemen go in the first round. And it's going to be interesting to see how many end up going in the first round. I mean, Quentin Nelson, obviously. I think Isaiah Wynn. Will Hernandez has a good chance to go into the first round.
Yeah.
And then which tackles go in the first round? Connor Williams from Texas, Orlando Brown from Oklahoma, McGlinchey from Notre Dame, and then the centers, both James Daniels from Iowa and then Billy Price from Ohio State. All those offensive linemen, a lot of those guys are second-round players, but they're going to go in the first because supply and demand. There's more demand than there is supply, and so those guys are going to get propped up. And so for the Giants in the second round, it's kind of, you know, who's left for us at the offensive line? Is there someone we view as a second-round player? And then if you wait till the third round, okay, well, then there's going to be more, you know, then you're left with maybe some fourth-round offensive linemen. So it's really tough with these offensive linemen because so many of these guys are going to get snatched up early because if you don't get them, you might be out of luck.
So third round is too deep, you think? Because of the way the prices are inflated, third-round guys are not good enough.
I really think that the price of these offensive linemen are going to be overvalued, and they're going to go higher than maybe their grade says they should go. And so that points to, okay, second round, maybe we don't love the player there, but we know he's not going to be available in the third, and we don't feel great about our options. Maybe you try to trade down a little bit. And maybe if you're sitting there at, 34, you try to trade up into the late first round and get that fifth-year option, make sure you get that guard that you want, Will Hernandez, whoever it is. I think that's definitely has to be on the table as well.
How about the tackle class? We sat here last year, and everyone panned, you know, Garrett Bowles, Ramczyk, and Ken Robinson.
Right.
These guys are going to go in the first round, but they're not first-round players. How does this group compare to that group? And if you look purely based on ability, are any of these guys really truly first-round picks in your opinion?
I don't think so. My first board that I released, draft board, I didn't have a tackle in my top 25.
Wow.
And, you know, it's you can poke holes each one of them. You just have to kind of figure out, okay, are these holes going to keep them from being long-term starters? Orlando Brown, for example, he came in today at 6'8", 345 pounds. I mean, you need to call an Uber to get around him.
That was before lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, but he has heavy feet. I don't want to tackle with heavy feet. He's able to compensate in a lot of ways because he has that wide base, wide hips, the wingspan. But in the NFL, when you have to line up against some of the premier pass rushers, is that going to be enough? And so Orlando Brown, he's not going to be for everybody. But there will be a team, I think, in the first round, maybe the top 20, that buys into his strengths as a player. Connor Williams, he's a case of you have to really buy into the 2016 tape.
I was going to say, you have to watch last year.
Right. 2016, he looked like a future first-round pick as a sophomore. He goes to Texas for his junior year. He looked abysmal in the first few games of the year.
And that was before his injury, right?
Before the injury. And he wasn't injured. It's not like he was playing injured. He just looked bad in the season opener against Maryland, and then he injured the knee against USC. Opted against surgery, came back after some rest and rehab, and did okay later in the year, but not up to the level of first-round pick. And so, again, if you're taking Connor Williams in the first, which, you know, I think is certainly possible, then you're really banking on that 2016 tape as this is the guy I'm getting, this is who I believe in. The guy in 2017, that was just an aberration. So big week this week for Connor Williams.
And then how about McGlinchey, the third guy that people consider at the top of that class?
Right, the top senior this year, top senior tackles. Hoping we get to see him at the Senior Bowl, but he decided not to go. He struggles with speed. You saw that in the Georgia game, saw that against some of the more athletic edge rushers. Him and Nelson on the left side of that line is just unfair in the run game. just really ridiculous. Road graders. And so I don't worry about him in the run game. But in pass protection, that's where some of the issues show up. And, you know, some people call maybe a right tackle. I want my left tackle and right tackle to almost be interchangeable. So I want guys that can, you know, because it's not like the best pass rushers are only lining up against the left tackle.
Dan, let me tell you, last year the Giants played Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Ryan Kerrigan, DeMarcus Lawrence. Guess where all of them lined up?
Yeah.
Over the right tackle.
Exactly. So teams are, you know, the left tackle, right tackle discrepancy, I don't think it's I think a lot more teams are buying into that. It's not as big of a deal as it used to be.
I got to ask you about the linebackers because I think the Giants are going to come out of this draft with some linebacking help. Leonard, Nwosu, guys as maybe second-day picks because I don't think they're taking a linebacker at the number two overall selection.
Right.
But second and third round, to me, that puts a linebacker in play.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the top two linebackers, Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, both those guys are top 15 players.
Right.
And then after that, Rashawn Evans might go in the first. He could be there in the early second. The day two linebacker that really stands out for me is Van Der Esch from Boise State.
Okay.
And this is a player who I love my favorite part about the draft process is learning about the journey of these guys. And Van Der Esch, he played 8-man football in the lowest level of Idaho high school football. Mm. He played quarterback, and so he, no offers, no real offers. He walks on at Boise State, spends the first few years, getting his body right, learning, getting better. Becomes a starter this past year as a junior, and he blows it up. He was top five in the FBS in tackles. The production was outstanding, and he got better throughout the year. You just see him as an ascending player, a guy with a light bulb starting to really illuminate. And so for me, I think Van Der Esch, somewhere on day two, he would make some sense.
We asked Steve Palazzolo this as well. Depth of this class, is it as deep as last year's class where you're grabbing, a starting caliber player in the third round, or is the drop-off a little bit earlier, you think, this season?
It's hard to say overall, but position by position, I think, like corner, really deep. Running back, really deep. Wide receiver, not great in the first round, but it's deep on day two. We talked about offensive line, how those guys are going to get overvalued because we don't have that depth.
Right.
So I think it really depends on the position. You could really point to, safety, not a great class this year. Pass rusher is average. Defensive tackle has some good players. I don't know if you'd call it a deep class. But the skill, so a lot of the skill positions, running back, wide receiver, corner, I think we're going to be able to find some starters on day two and maybe even into day three.
Wide receiver. I took a look at these guys. I haven't watched a ton of tape, but I watched some.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone coming out seems to profile as a slot receiver now. You don't get many of these like 6'2 guys that actually run in the 4.4s that can
right.
play outside. I see a bunch of 5'11 guys that played slot in college.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for an outside guy, because the Giants have Sterling Shepard, they don't need another slot guy. And if you want to get a young outside guy in the second, third, fourth round, who are you looking at?
Cortland Sutton in the second round would be interesting. I mean, he's a big power forward on the football field. Big week for him here. What's he going to run the 40-yard dash? Is he a 4.58 guy, or is he a 4.52, 4.49, that type of athlete? Hard to say in that SMU offense. And, just going from that SMU offense to what he's asked to do in the NFL, it's going to be a big jump. So that's why his value is probably going to be early in second round. But there's a lot of young players that you point to in this draft that can play. You project them to play outside. Equanimeous St. Brown from Notre Dame. A first rounder on name alone, but he'll probably be a day two pick, and you can get good value there. So I agree with what you're saying, though. A lot of these players, they didn't face press coverage in college.
Yeah.
And
that's a big deal.
Exactly. And so like an Anthony Miller from Memphis, I think he can play outside in the NFL, but he's probably going to be best as a slot player where he has space. He can manipulate defenders, but I think he can play outside. It's just he might be best inside. And you're right. We are seeing a lot of that coming out of the college ranks.
It seems to me that a lot of the guys we've talked about, in many instances, you've talked about how they might get pushed up. Is there a guy who everybody thinks is a surefire first rounder or even a high to mid first rounder who's going to fall like a stone because it happens every year?
It does. And I think we'll figure out some of that this week. A guy like Arden Key, pass rusher from LSU,
right.
A guy who, you see a lot of first-round traits and special traits, top 10, but there's a lot of question marks, too. He took a leave of absence from the team over the spring. He had surgery on a shoulder, and then this junior year didn't go quite as expected. As a sophomore, he set the LSU single-season record for sacks. He was nearly unblockable in the SEC with that edge speed. And then, the junior year was a train wreck. And so how do you, the interviews that he goes through this week will be huge, determining, okay, is he a top 20 player or is he going to fall a little bit? And Harold Landry from Boston College, a senior pass rusher who
okay.
is really talented. But, he led the nation in sacks last year as a junior.
Right.
Surprised a lot of people by coming back for a senior year. And he was hurt most of the year. And when he was on the field, you didn't see that same production. So some of these pass rushers you have some questions about. Could go a little later than maybe you expect, but they're talented players.
All right, we're going to make it a little more difficult this year since the Giants are picking top of the second round as well.
Right.
Give me your prediction, and obviously you will retain the right to change your mind. We'll have you on again right before the draft. Giants first and second round picks. Slam on me.
I'm going to go with Bradley Chubb, number two. I kind of go back and forth between quarterback and a position player. Right now I'll lean Bradley Chubb, just another pass rusher to get after the offense. And then second round, it's like Kerryon Johnson.
Ooh.
Running back from Auburn, who,
wow.
No exaggeration, he might be the toughest running back I've ever evaluated. Wow. Just in terms of physical toughness, he will not leave the field. And he just gets beat up, and he keeps performing at a high level, high pain threshold. And he's a really good player. Excellent patience and vision as an inside back. He can pass protect. He can catch a ball in the backfield. So I think Kerryon Johnson, early second round, would be a great value pick.
I want to go back to the first round for a second. Because mm-hmm. Dave Gettleman said today, you have to find a transformational Hall of Fame player with the second overall pick.
Yeah.
And Pat Shurmur said, look, the Giants, last time they picked the side, they drafted Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks. If you're looking for a player that's really graded that high at what they do.
Right.
Is a quarterback in play for you? Do you think any of these guys live up to that potential level?
I think it's definitely possible. When you look at a guy like Sam Darnold, who to me is the top quarterback this year, the intangibles, what he does at such a young age, at 20 years old, he checks a lot of the boxes that you really look at for a young player. His ability to anticipate passing windows. His ability to create outside of structure and that athleticism where he can evade the rush, keep his eyes downfield, still make plays. And then this overall mental battle that it takes at the position. At such a young age, Sam Darnold has already shown that he can do that. He needs to get better in some areas, but I think he could be a high-level player. And then with Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, those are my next two quarterbacks. I think there's reasons to believe that they can be long-term starters. My problem with what Dave Gettleman knows more football than I do, but it's just putting a lot of pressure. Not every draft has Hall of Fame, a clear-cut top five player. Not every draft has that, but he's going to find one at number two, it sounds like. So, that could point to the pass rusher, could point to a quarterback.
How do you think the very top couple picks in this draft compare to ones in drafts past?
Well, I think, we'll see the quarterbacks go high. 2 years ago we saw Goff and Wentz, and then last year we saw Trubisky go two. This year it's going to be similar with these quarterbacks. The first domino that needs to fall is Kirk Cousins. Then we'll see some of those other free agents, and that'll give us a better idea of, who's shopping for a quarterback in the draft, the Broncos, or, who's going to be doing what. But when you look at it, a lot of teams in the top five, top eight, the Jets are in that discussion. We could see a team like the Dolphins or the Cardinals trade up there to look for a quarterback.
Now you're talking Paul's language.
Yeah, we're going to see early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We know if you don't have your quarterback, you're in trouble, and some of those teams don't have quarterbacks.
I have one more for you, and I have to make the tri-state area people happy because there is a guy who played at the Shrine game, Greg Sinnott out of Wagner, who was a flip tackle right and left side.
Right. And basketball background.
That's what he was until just a couple of years ago. Is there a chance that he gets picked on the third day, or is he just a priority free agent?
I think a lot depends on the private workouts. When teams have a chance to, offensive line coaches get a chance to break him down and get a better understanding of, his awareness. The physical traits are great. He looks the part. But when it comes down to it, does he understand technique? Does he understand schemes? Does he understand what he needs to do? And as long as he has a baseline understanding of that, well, then, absolutely, he's going to get drafted as a development player. But the workouts, the private workouts, that's when it's going to be paramount for him.
Dane, good stuff. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
We'll catch up to you before the draft. Dane Brugler, NFL Draft Scout. We'll be back with Art Stapleton on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com.
With the combine coming up, I thought I would reflect a little bit and think about my combine training. And I just remember being in the best shape of my life, every day, 5 days a week, 6 days a week at a time, just working, grinding nonstop, eating healthy. You have a meal plan. You got one day where you're doing 40 work. The next day you're working the L drill. Next day is position work, and it's just nonstop. And, it was a challenging time, but I also got in the best shape of my life, and I think it prepared me for the grind of the NFL and what was to come. So, good luck to all the guys that's going to be entering the combine, and, go ball out.
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Just coming from a single parent household, and to give back just always remind me of my childhood.
I didn't do what I do. Nah, I'm just playing. I ain't that advanced.
I always told myself if I get in a position, I want to be able to help guys. So I always want to be relevant and have my face known in the community.
Hey, there we go.
What's going on, fam? Good. So y'all trying to hit today or what, man?
Exactly. I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Go! There you go. Go, 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 go.
I think the Giants organization does a great job. I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Break it down, Jake.
Hard work on three. Hard work on three. One, two, three.
Hard work.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. More than an hour and a half in. First show at the Combine. Of course, shows all week from Indianapolis, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 12 to 2. Special two-hour editions. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and you recognize the man in the middle here. That's Art Stapleton, covers the New York Football Giants for the record. Art, we heard from Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman this morning. Let's keep it basic. What were your major takeaways from talking to them at the podium and off to the side?
Well, you know, I mean, we talked to him at the podium. Then we had Pat back here on a table separate with the beat. Then we had Dave out in the hallway. So there was a lot of talking going on between Dave and Pat.
Yeah, but they didn't give you the pick.
Well, and that's the thing. Well, that's because you haven't revealed it yet, Paul. You know, I said this about Dave Gettleman that, you know, as soon as he started talking about, he was asked about the running back situation. And, you know, obviously last year in Carolina, he picked Christian McCaffrey 8. So the idea of the value of a running back, and could you take Saquon Barkley?
The quote, devaluing the running back position is comical,
right,
was his quote.
Well, the point, and then out on social media, as soon as it went out, the idea was, well, it's Dave Gettleman's smokescreen that the Giants want people to think that they're taking a running back, and they're not. Well, the reality is Dave Gettleman, from what I've seen previously but also today, it's a very hard for him to not be as transparent as possible. he's not a smokescreen guy.
Oh, no, he's very direct.
He's pretty direct.
Yes.
So if he didn't believe that they were going to take a running back or they had a chance to take a running back, I think he would have done that. So this is the time of lying season and everyone else. But I really didn't get that sense from the Giants. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, we can get into different specifics, but the bottom line, the big takeaway I took away from Gettleman and Shurmur is the fact that, you know, look, we all play part of fantasy drafts and we do mock drafts. The reality is the New York Giants, as constituted, will walk into draft night with the number two pick, and they will have their choice of two people in this entire draft, and they have to have a conviction about one or the other to be the guy for them. And that's it.
And it could be any position.
And it could be any position.
Unless they trade out.
Absolutely. But my point is that they can go into this combine and say, you know what? We like a little chicken. We like a little steak. But we really love the fish. You know what? Pretty good chance that the fish is going to be there at number two. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of how they're approaching it. And both Gettleman and Shurmur said, we don't have a pecking order. I asked Gettleman specifically, do you have a list that you haven't shared with anyone of your pecking order? You know, the top five that you're really coming here to look. And he said no. He said he believes to do everything by his playbook. And his playbook is to do the evaluation. And I think he said you can't cheat the process.
Yep, right.
And I think that's a major factor for him. As far as Pat Shurmur goes, he said there are some quarterbacks that he likes, some other players that he likes, but he's obviously not going to reveal it to us.
All right, one of the other positions that I think Dave Gettleman mentioned earlier today as well, besides running back being undervalued by so many people, is the offensive guard spot, which so many people say you can't take one, for example, at number two, where Quentin Nelson is getting some play.
Or spend $1 million on them in free agency, whatever, same deal.
Exactly. So how did you take that response?
It's funny because my six takeaways from Dave Gettleman plug just posted on NorthJersey.com, and one of those was guarded optimism. And I exactly what you said, Paul. One of his points, because he was asked about, can you pay a guard $12 million a year? And it was actually from, I think it was one of the reporters who covered him in Carolina who asked the question, obviously with intent about Andrew Norwell, the guard, the star guard that has been speculated as a Giants target in free agency. And Gettleman pointed out the Saints and how they have Andrews Pete at one guard spot. They signed Larry Warford at another spot, and how, you know, no quarterback wants to walk in the huddle and go, okay, guys, come at me up the middle. So they made he made a very pointed.
Especially one who can't move.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Eli is the quarterback, right? I mean, we have that clear now. It's been 3 months. Eli Manning will be the quarterback for the Giants, we think.
You had to put the we think in there, didn't you, Hart?
I think the big thing for me about what he said about the guards is that essentially how I took it was, hey, guys, if we decide we want to go after Andrew Norwell and pay him $12 million a year, we're paying him $12 million a year because we think he's going to help us and he's a phenomenal player at that talent.
And the market's the market. We
right.
don't determine it.
Yeah, I think he said if you don't think that car is worth $150,000, well, if someone buys it.
It is.
It is.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So I could foresee a situation where the Giants do not shy away from drafting Quentin Nelson at two or maybe a trade back to five or six, even though, you know, because there is this idea of if you put that price tag on Norwell, then you won't draft a guard. What I come away with Dave Gettleman today saying, you know what, he would have no problem putting his two best offensive linemen, one at left guard, one at right guard, and away we go.
And you know why I agree with you? Because Dave Gettleman doesn't care about perception.
Yeah.
He cares about reality
and
what it is that he has to do to get this team back on a winning track. He's not interested in what other people say.
And look, that mentality could get you into trouble sometimes. You know, that you could fall into a situation where you overdraft a guy and maybe you could have made prudent. But the difference is that, you know, in years past when former general manager Jerry Reese was criticized for not maneuvering in the draft, for accruing assets and being able to move up or down. The difference is that you are at number two. This is a different ball game. And Gettleman has continuously brought up the idea, and so has Pat Shurmur, that the last time the Giants picked second, they picked a Hall of Famer.
It's Lawrence
Taylor. The greatest player in franchise history in Lawrence Taylor. So Gettleman, that was another part of what Gettleman said at the podium today.
And by the way, Shurmur did too. Like he said, Banks at three. There seemed to be a real unity of message when it came to finding that generational player. Now, Shurmur said, the guy's in the draft. You just got to figure out which guy it is.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it's interesting because we obviously got a lot from Pat Shurmur today too, but Dave Gettleman just has that way about him that, you know, as a general manager, I mean, he's out in front. He's kind of putting this whole thing together. You know, it's funny, Pat Shurmur left us and he goes, all right, guys, see you in April. You know, that's kind of Pat's mentality. But what I was going to say is Gettleman left no doubt that if they the player they take at two, if they take a player at two, he expects that player to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, you're setting that standard up. You know, it goes back to the idea of can you take a player at number two who's not going to take the field this year? And that would come back to quarterback. You know, can you take a franchise quarterback? And Gettleman said, well, look, I'll take a guy there if I believe that he's going to be our next Eli. You know, I'll take that guy. If
he said
I know
you have to take that guy.
He said, I know I'm going to get another 10, 15 years out of him, I'll take him and let him sit for a year or two. But the bottom line is I do believe that Gettleman has – I think he has an idea as to what players he likes, but I do think he is going into this with kind of a clean slate and a blank slate. I don't know if the coaches can say the same thing. I think the coaches have kind of the apples of their eye, but I don't believe that Dave Gettleman does.
I agree.
One other thing that Dave Gettleman said, which really echoes what George Young said many years ago, it's amazing because Dave Gettleman did not work for George Young, but he is so similar. The quotes are almost verbatim to the kind of stuff George used to talk about, is that you have to go through free agency, and then when you get to the draft, you can't go into the draft saying, I must take blank position.
Yeah.
You've got to fill those must-need positions in free agency before you get to the draft.
Yeah, you know what, and I'll say this. The last month or so, you know, we've seen a lot of speculation. You guys have dealt with it. We're dealing with it on a beat writer basis. The bottom line is this is a new era for the Giants. And as much as we want to talk about George Young and his philosophy and the idea that, you know, it's the Giants' way and you know, and John Mara and Steve Tisch have their way of what they want, this is our first chance to see a Dave Gettleman, Pat Shurmur draft. So everything that we've known from a Jerry Reese, Mark Ross draft is kind of out the window.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting to see how everyone takes things. Now, I know you're a big proponent of trading down, and initially I'm not, because I don't think you can get too cute, as Dave Gettleman said today. You know, he's open to trading. If someone, I think he said, you know, pulled a little Michael Corleone and said, if someone comes to me with an offer I can't refuse, well then I'll be open for business.
Hey, and if the price isn't right, I wouldn't trade it either.
But you don't move away. And I really get the sense from Gettleman is the idea that, you know what, if I got a player in this draft that I love and thinks is going to make my team better for the next 10 years, I don't care if you think I should take him at seven. I'm taking him at two. And that would be, and that's me paraphrasing what Dave Gettleman has said.
He will follow his conviction.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. He will do that.
So I think, you know, and going forward, I mean, I think kind of a lost story in this whole thing about the quarterbacks, and we've all written about it, the Ernie Accorsi falling in love with Eli Manning, pounding the table for Eli Manning back in 2004. And I had a chance to ask Dave Gettleman about that, and I'll end up writing a story later on this weekend. How, as a general manager, do you get to that conviction to the point
That's
where it is your guy? I mean, Ernie Accorsi nailed it for the Giants.
He did.
And if he didn't.
He did.
And what, you know, you never ask the question, what if you went wrong? What if it didn't work? And I think that's part of Dave Gettleman's not afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that there is a part where he's got to get to a point. I don't know what his limit is. I don't know where the threshold is where he goes from, I kind of like that guy, to I'm all in. And I think that's where the Giants have to go for, if they're going to take
the point of no return.
Right. Exactly.
Final question, Art. I heard more questions today about a backup quarterback than I've ever heard in the history of the New York Football Giants since I've been covering since 2007. But it's understandable.
Geno Smith?
Yeah, no, not Geno Smith.
Sorry.
A lot of Davis Webb questions.
Yeah, where's he going to sign?
And the sense that I got is that, yeah, they liked some of the stuff they saw when he was coming out of college. Everything he's done around the facility, people have liked. He's well-liked in the building. They think he could become a really good quarterback. However, I also got the sense that what they think of Davis Webb is not going to affect what they do in the draft if they really do believe in one of these quarterbacks. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the presence of Davis Webb will preclude them from taking a quarterback if they fall in love with someone in this draft, whoever
right.
it may be. But what I do think is interesting is that we all need to look at this as a situation that Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur and the coaching staff is essentially treating Davis Webb as if he were part of the class of 2018. They need to take
right.
this, whatever scouting report they put together for Davis Webb over the last month and a half, and from whatever they can scour, they talked about watching practice film and watching preseason film and going back to their reports when he was in the draft. You know, Pat Shurmur talked a lot about remembering scouting Davis in college, and they had, you know, he was on their list in Minnesota, whereas Gettleman, they weren't looking for a quarterback,
right.
so they really didn't spend much time on him. But I do think that over the last month and a half, Dave Gettleman, Pat Shurmur, et al., have put together a scouting report of Davis Webb. And now that scouting report will go up against the Darnolds and the Rosens
yep.
and the Mayfields and the Allens and everybody else. And if they decide through all of their evaluation that Davis Webb is a better prospect than the other guys that they have, I think they'll go in another direction.
Yeah, or,
I'm not saying
yeah.
it is, mm-hmm. but I think really that's kind of where they're going to look.
Or even if it's close, you know, the area of the guy in the house, you might as
yeah.
well stick with him. All right, real rapid fire. I promise you two calls I get to him in holding. Coach Marvin, make your point, and we'll give you a response. What do you got, Coach? Coach Marvin. Coach Marvin? And Coach Marvin is not there.
Oh, what a shame.
But we can try Justin in New Jersey if he wants to chime in with Art Stapleton. Justin, what's up?
Hello?
Okay. I guess we're not doing calls. Art, good stuff. Appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks,
Thank
guys.
You very much.
Thanks, Art.
Good stuff.
To see
That's
you.
Art Stapleton.
Appreciate it,
we'll be back with Madeline Burke as we wrap things up from Indianapolis right after this.
It's Romeo Quara. The best thing about the combine was being able to meet all the players I played with and against with in college, and just being surrounded by all these great athletes, trying to take the next step in the professional career, hoping to make it in the NFL, get drafted by a team or sign with a team, whatever the case may be. But just an awesome experience being able to practice and meet the coaches, team owners, GMs, and good luck to all the guys out there participating in the combine this weekend. Enjoy it. It's a long week. But at the same time, you gotta enjoy yourself.
He's under pressure and he gets sacked.
Individual rolls up.
Snap is good at kick. Oh, it's way to this block. Jason
Pierre-Paul,
JPP.
I think when he plays with leverage, he's as powerful a defensive lineman as today. He does everything well.
Pass intercepted. He threw it by Jason Pierre-Paul and he runs it in for the touchdown.
You play like him and we'll go places.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Final few minutes of our opening salvo from Indianapolis. John Schmuck, Paul Dottino. And, of course, you recognize Madeline Burke. He's on Giants.com. Often she'll be our roving reporter this week, kind of running the floor and trying to get some good guests on to get some additional insight from what you see on the show, and we'll be rolling some of our interviews in. Madeline, what are some of the things that you're kind of taking a look at right here in Indianapolis over the few days you're going to be here?
Well, first of all, you mentioned me running the floor. I've been taking notes from Paul Dottino and how quickly he gets up and down the sidelines and
games.
Got
my Nikes on.
I got to get this guy's speed out here at the combine.
You have no chance, by the way. I'm just letting you know.
But you got to aspire. You got to aim high.
Yeah.
And settle for low. But yeah, I'll be, you know, this is my first time out here at the NFL Combine. It's a great experience so far. Obviously, all the teams are represented, the media is represented. I'll be getting to, you know, get some interviews with some media members that cover the Giants and get their reactions, much like you guys have been doing on BBK. But, you know, we'll do that for the website as well and get just kind of a fan experience and, you know, an immersive experience to kind of lend that to fans watching at home on Giants.com.
Anything surprise you so far? First time here?
How hot it was inside the building.
Yeah,
it was warm.
Yeah. Indeed.
It was quite warm when I walked in, but, you know, that was the biggest surprise so far.
If you do not sample at least some of the food out here, Brandon London's going to be very unhappy.
I know. I feel like I have to do a Snapchat of the St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail because that sauce with the horseradish is going to be, yeah, that's all you hear about.
And we should give a special shout-out. Last night we enjoyed a meal at St. Elmo's, and
it is
needless
not
to
us.
Say,
We were busy flying out here this morning.
Oh, yeah. We flew out here this morning. But there's a lot of good food out here in Indy. There's a lot of good stuff. And speaking of Snapchat, too, I'm going to be taking over the Giants Snapchat this week.
Oh.
So we got to do a little shout-out on BBK. We're going to do a live – welcome to Snapchat. We're live on BBK.
Paul, you got to lean
John
in.
John Schmelt.
Okay.
Paul Dottino. And the viewers at home, we got Mike back there behind camera. Thanks for watching. So, yeah, you can check that out. I'm just posting that to the Giant Snapchat story.
And, of course, Mike, who you saw on camera a second ago, will be doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, too, which you'll see towards the end of the week and next week as well.
Yeah.
So make sure that you stay tuned to Giants.com for coverage all week long. And, of course, big
someday
kickoff.
I'll figure out how that works.
We'll keep you posted, Paul.
Okay.
He won't.
He's frequently featured.
He won't. We'll be back tomorrow at noon on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, of course, stay tuned. You'll see Madeline's reports. We'll be doing the two-minute drills as well at the end of the day. So make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com for that. Thank you for joining us on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We hope you learned as much as we did as we delve deeper into the 2018 draft class. For Paul Dottino, for Madeline Burke, for all of our guests, to all our listeners and callers, thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Giants.com from Indy. Have a good one, everybody.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the punch, bubble the football.
Bang.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants. Jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. Pays the catch with one hand for the touchdown.